something of this nature can end at any moment. You got to take it all in. You got to play like it's your last gig. Give it your all, because that's what you're there for. You love it. You want to play your best. As drummers, we are the driving force.
Welcome, everybody, to Nashville Drummers Podcast, episode 15.
Today, we were super stoked to welcome Jake Summers to the podcast, best known as the drummer for Luke Combs.
Yeah, it was awesome getting to know Jake, getting to hear how he came up playing drums and just how deep his studiousness goes. And, spoiler alert, it's quite deep. But more importantly than all of that, ladies and gentlemen, Jake brought pizza to the podcast. That is a Nashville Drummers podcast first. No one has ever brought a pie to us. Let me tell you, we were excited.
I think this is one of those episodes where, I mean, we definitely, you know, go off topic a little bit. And that was great, too, because we really got to learn about the man behind the drums and, you know, his personality. But there's a lot of true words of wisdom, I think, buried in the episode. This is an episode that you might want to re-listen to and maybe even take notes, especially with the gig that he has obviously acquired. And just his attitude and his perseverance and his work ethic is something to definitely take note of. So before we get to the interview, just a few quick notes. We now have a brand new website. Visit NashvilleDrummersPodcast.com. It's going to have all of our episodes linked with pictures and video. And while you're on the website, you should definitely subscribe to our mailing list. Just give us your email and we'll send out a few reminders about new episodes and special events going on in Nashville. So definitely don't want to miss out on that. And lastly, just a quick note on merch. While we are working on some new items, we currently do have some beautiful custom drum heads available. Send us a message or you can actually buy these on our website. And again, these will directly support what Nate and I are doing here at the podcast, so we definitely appreciate all of your support. So with that, we hope you enjoy our conversation with Jake Summers.
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you guys for having me.
Yeah, this is awesome. This is the first where we've started the podcast with some pizza, courteous of Jake.
Gotta eat, right?
Mm-hmm. Is that the Long Island in you?
It was more of part of that, and I'm also like, this is kind of bleeding into when everybody eats, so yeah. I thought, yeah, let's eat.
Yeah, hey. I love it.
Love it.
Where was this again? What place?
Midnight Oil.
You said it's
West
by you,
Nashville,
right?
Yeah.
Is that, you live in West?
Yeah. Not giving out the exact location, but yeah, I live in West.
I'm in East, he's in Hermitage, yep. And
nice.
That's all we'll say about that.
Right? Yep. That's all I'm going to say about that. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, that was great pie. I really enjoyed
it. I'm glad you guys enjoyed it.
Also from New York, so I'm more just,
hell
give,
yeah.
Give me a cheese slice.
Yeah, I'm cool with
New
that
York
too.
Flop, you know.
Yep. Mm. You know, so, Jets pizza is pretty good,
Jets,
too.
I don't think I've had Jets.
Solid.
I haven't had many. I was going to ask you. Like, I haven't had
a nice
a whole
crisp
lot of,
to it.
Like, good New York
nice
pizza
crunch.
Here in Nashville.
NY pie is my favorite spot.
I like 5 points.
I don't mind 5 points. I think they overcharge for their pizza, though.
Yeah.
Like, NY pie is awesome. You can get a large pepperoni and, like, 6 knots for maybe $28.
Yeah.
Whereas, like, you get a large pepperoni at 5 points, it's $40.
Yeah, it's true.
And the slices at NY Pie are like true, authentic New York slices.
Yeah.
Every time I'm like, man, do I really want to take the plunge and spend this kind of money? But I'm like, God, I do really love this pizza. And if I have someone in from out of town who wants pizza, I'm like, that's probably my favorite in town. Yeah, whatever. Let's do it. Yeah, I'll spend $40 on a pizza.
Yep.
But I just know that it's because I love you. Anyway.
So where in Long Island are you from?
So I'm originally from an area called Oldfield.
Oldfield.
But I was born in the city.
Gotcha.
So I moved out when I was a little kid. Moved my senior year of high school, a little closer to the city. Still on the island. And
how far? I'm not familiar with that area. Is that far south?
It's more like towards the water. Like,
okay.
Like if you went to the end of my, where I lived, the end of the block, like, it just dead ends and you're on the water, like, and you could see Connecticut from across the way in the distance. Always just played drums, you know, ever since I was a little kid.
Yeah.
So
Did you have the pots and pans thing going on?
Probably so. I mean, I don't know how this happened, but my mom has a photo of me, which she showed me of me in a diaper with a box hat around my neck and drumsticks in my hands. So it started that early.
Wow. Yeah.
And then one of my cousins at their wedding, I guess I was like 3 or 4 years old, you know, picture a little kid in a tuxedo wearing glasses. And I'd asked the band leader if I could play the drums during a break. And they said, yeah. And I'm like, your feet can't touch the pedals, just hands. So that's, I did that. And my parents just knew like, hey, like, I guess this is it. He's going to play drums.
Yeah.
So kind of went on from there. Got a kit when I was 6. And then took off. You ever heard of this company called Max, M-A-X-X?
No. Yes, I have.
I had one of those, and I played it till I couldn't play anymore. So
was that like a full 5-piece?
That was, let's see, came with a snare, came with 2 up, 1 down, and a kick. Yeah, so a 5-piece, and man, I played that thing till no tomorrow.
Yeah,
like every day after school, I'd drop my book back down and play drums for hours.
Did it have those like the cheap, almost papery cymbals, or did it have like? Did you have regular cymbals on that
side? I had regular cymbals. It came with Sabian B8s, actually. Okay. And I broke those things. You know, when you're like 6 years old, you just want to hit stuff and play. And I beat the crap out of those things.
And
like no one's business. Oh, yeah, I still do too. Believe me. Yeah. They're just not B8s.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
And you're still a Sabian guy, though.
Mm-hmm. Right? Yeah. Been with them since beginning of 2017.
Cool.
Wow. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
I definitely want to still go into like your upbringings and like your moves to Nashville. Why don't we start? I mean, people obviously know you as Luke Combs, drummer. That's your current, you know, your biggest gig. Why don't you just tell us like where you are currently with tour season and what's kind of going on?
So,
you guys recently headlined CMA, right?
I don't really know how you describe if there is a headliner for CMA, really, because it's like all these big acts in one night, and it's like, I don't know if there's really a headlining slot.
Yeah, true.
But I would say we played, if I had to guess what a headlining slot would be, we played from like 9:20 to roughly 10 o'clock, you know, a quick 40-minute set. It was a lot of fun. It's always been fun the other two times we've done it. But
that's at Nissan?
It's at Nissan. It was Saturday night, which is the biggest night. Yeah. And we're currently in the middle of what I like to call our mini stadium tour. So we did Denver in May. We did Seattle in June, right before CMA Fest. So when it came to do Nissan, we're like, oh, it's a walk in the park for us now.
Yeah.
And then we just got out of rehearsals because the new record, Growing Up, came out on Friday. And then what do we have? We're going to Canada next week to do 3 festivals. And then we're doing this country concert at the Shoe in Ohio State. It's where their football team plays. Yep. And then we're ending our mini stadium tour in Atlanta where the Falcons play July 30th.
Awesome.
Right. Yeah. So, and then we'll start our tour September.
Amazing. Have you had kind of memorable like stadium gigs like this past year? Or I guess like
they've definitely been memorable.
Yeah.
Let's see. Denver, day of our sound check, it rained and snowed.
Seattle was pretty cool.
Seattle was cool. It rained during the show. And then, I was covered, obviously, being the drummer, you're in the back.
Right.
So you're always golden on that one. But I remember in Denver during the show, it was like 40 degrees and we all wore like sweatshirts and jackets. That was the first time we ever done that. And it was just like, we're all on stage like, this is great. We're keeping warm, but like it's freezing outside.
Good Lord, yeah.
But you just have all this adrenaline rushing through you. You know, you're looking out and like you're seeing 53,000 plus people at these places singing along to every word, to every song. And it's very much still a pinch me moment. Doesn't matter. I don't care how many times you do a stadium or an arena. It's always a pinch me moment.
Yeah.
Because they're there to see you and you got to put on your A game every single time.
Yeah.
And that thing that hasn't died in you at all.
Oh, no.
That's awesome.
No. Because, like, I mean, think about it. Something of this nature can end at any moment. You got to take it all in. You got to play like it's your last gig. You know, knock on wood that, you know, this is going for the next 20, 25 years. But
I like that perspective.
Still got to give it your all because that's what you're there for. You love it. You want to play your best. And you want to, as drummers, we are the driving force. We are the guy in the NASCAR seat driving that vehicle.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, if the energy is not there, if the love is not there in the drum seat, you can feel that.
And I feel like, you know, obviously if a crowd comes to see the artist, yeah, they always look at the artist first, but then who do they look at probably afterwards? The drummer. We make the biggest motions. We're the ones who are, you know, we need to be reaching. I don't care how small of a venue you're playing. You still need to reach that person all the way in the back. Even if it's a 500 cap room, 300 cap room, you got to make the big motions that, you know, they need to be able to see and be like, hey, I'm all the way back here, but I'm feeling the same energy that the people in the front are feeling.
Yeah.
No matter what type or size of venue you play, you got to make those people feel that too.
Yeah.
That's a very Rich Redman thing.
It's exactly right? Who I got it from.
Yeah. And you guys were touring with Jason Aldean, right?
Yep, in 2018.
Wow.
So I watched every show from there, is either from side stage or out front. I remember, so I play open handed.
Right. I think. Yeah. Definitely want to talk about that.
One of you guys do, right?
Oh, hell yeah.
You're starting to, but you don't.
I mean, I've done it since I was 18 or so.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, now since I've been doing Broadway for a living, I've basically played to open or switched to open hand.
I love it.
Completely.
Yeah. Well, we can definitely talk about that.
Yeah.
But I remember watching Rich, and there were times where if I'm side stage and he saw me like watching him, he would just for the hell of it switch to open hand to play. And I'm like, man, like I just jokingly flipping the bird. So. But he knows it's out of love.
Yeah. What was the beginner thing for that for you? What was the thing, the catalyst for you to play open-handed?
So I'm actually left-handed.
Oh, you are lefty.
Okay. I'm left-handed, but I golf righty.
Okay.
When I did snowboard, I snowboard like a righty, not a lefty. I guess they would call lefty goofy.
Yeah.
I've always played open-handed. I just sat down at the kit when I was 6 years old when I got it, and my arms just naturally didn't cross over. They just landed how they did. And
that makes sense.
Yeah, it really does make sense. It's like, yeah, if you're a righty, I get you're going to want to mimic your favorite drummers and do the crossover and whatever, and that you do have to keep time with your dominant hand, which is your right hand. But as a lefty, I even tried switching it to a completely left kit. My left foot was like, nah, dude. This ain't working out. Got to switch back. And that's just how I feel comfortable. Yeah. I have my ride, you know, right over here. So I play the ride on my right hand instead of the left.
Yeah.
And just how I feel comfortable.
Yeah. Dude, love it.
And you can make bigger motions. You know, think about it. It doesn't matter, once again, what size club or venue you're playing. You, as long as you have your left hand, you know, working the hi-hat, and you can just throw your arm up there for anybody to see.
It's true. There's no interference like this.
Nope. And when you're going around the kit, there's so much more you can do. That's why I try to always tell people in some form, because I teach as well, practice a little bit of open-handed playing after you get done with what you mainly need to work on.
Yeah.
It's always good to have in your bag, because you never know when you might have to use it.
Yeah.
The thing I've been telling people to do, I'm like, because I get a lot of questions. I'm like, so somebody will come down and who's also playing Broadway. So you always play open? I'm like, yeah. And I really want to get into it. And I've said this like 10 times now to people down there. I'm like, just learn one song and commit to doing one song. Every time it comes on, you play it open. And learn it completely. And then that's it. And then you can go back to doing what you were doing after that.
Yeah. But like, okay. You can do that, or you can just take the easy grooves, AKA Rich's Money Beats.
Yeah.
And just do a minute of each of those open handed at home.
Yep.
Or you could come to me and I could show you how to do it all.
Yeah. There you go.
Probably should go to Jake.
Yeah. Do it.
So I want to go back to when you mentioned Jason Aldean and Rich Redman. What else did you learn from Rich besides, of course, just playing loud?
Oh, yeah.
I know Rich is just full of knowledge and insight. Just a great guy.
Yeah. I mean, this wasn't even on tour. This was somewhat recently. You know, I've been doing clinics, or going to be doing clinics this year, and he and I had met for coffee, and I wanted to pick his brain more about that. And it was like, you know, we're both with the same symbol company, and they can help out, but it's like, hey, if you do all the cold calling yourself, especially when you're with a major act now, it's a lot easier to book stuff. So he said, you know, do that, you know, call colleges, call drum shops, music stores, high school. So I did all that on Friday, just calling every place I can potentially find. The majority of them are like, yeah, we want to have you.
Yeah.
So, which is awesome. Like, I did one in Denver that my one of my Sabian people put together, which was great. They're helping me put together one in Ohio, one in Louisville. But other than that, I'm doing the rest of my own. And all you have to do is, I realize, like, I'm really good at either talking to someone one-on-one on the phone or having to leave a voicemail of like, hi, I'm so-and-so. I play for so-and-so. I'd love to do a masterclass and or clinic at your school, college, music store. If you guys have done that and you're interested, please give me a call back at this number. Yep. So, and, you know, just doing that goes a long way. Mm-hmm. So just showing the initiative and all that stuff.
Yeah. And the fact that it's you making that call.
Probably
some people wouldn't expect, again, like with your major gig, like that you'd have a manager or just someone else doing kind of the dirty work. But that's cool to hear that you're still like are responsible for your own, like, you know.
You have to be. If you want it, you got to go get it yourself.
Yeah, I love that.
There's no giving that, delegating it to your people.
Like, no.
Just go and do
that. For some of them, they're like, hey, like, we want to get you to do one here. It's like, okay, cool. You know, which is great because if I'm already with that company, it helps them out too. It's like, hey, we have one of our artists doing a clinic or a masterclass here, which obviously then whoever comes to it, it's like, hey, what cymbals do you play? Cool. You're playing Sabian. I want to play those too.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I would imagine, because I don't know the story of how you got the gig you have. We're going to get there.
It's the question that everybody wants to know.
But I know that's the whole thing is like, I think it always seems to come back to the harder I work, the luckier I get thing. Like, well, and do you know who Naval Ravikant is?
No.
Nope.
He's got this incredible, he did a great interview on Joe Rogan. He has this incredible podcast that was just based on a tweet storm that he did. And he lays out his whole economic theory. The guy's a genius. And one of the things he talked about and blew my mind, he was like, there is such a thing as luck. There are four categories of luck. One is blind luck that happens to you out of just nothing. Just, you know, whatever. A tree falls on you. That's bad luck. The other is when you're stirring the pot and you create something by doing that. The third category is when you are so good at something that good things start happening to you. And then the fourth category is when you're so good at something that other people's blind luck starts applying to you. And the example he gives is, well, say you're the best deep sea diver in the world and someone discovers that in this really deep part of the ocean, there's this buried treasure here. Like it's there. We know it's there and we need someone to go get it. So now their luck is your luck. Anyway.
I never heard that.
Interesting. Yeah. Cool.
So luck's real.
One of my favorite quotes is luck is when preparation meets opportunity.
Yep, I've heard that one.
Yeah. So why don't we go there? I mean, I personally know your story. I think it's fascinating.
Yeah. So how did I get the gig that I'm on now?
I guess maybe start back Long Island, and then you went to
Long Island. Philadelphia. So my high school didn't have any music program aside from like vocal choir, so I did that. But I took lessons outside of school since I was like 6 years old. Had a bunch of different teachers, but two of the big ones that I had in New York was Dom Famularo, who hope you're doing well, Dom. Do you know who John Favicchia is?
I've heard the name.
His protege whenever Dom was out of town, so I studied with John a lot, who's a monster player as well. And
he's a big fusion player,
yeah,
right?
Monster fusion guy, like just incredible player. And I still, you know, I'm good buddies with both of them still, and I'll still like pick John's brain when I can, when I see him, and we just sit down and play drums, and he'll show me something, and I'm like, oh, like, you know, just show me something cool that I can't do, and he doesn't. I'm like, well, save me like 30 minutes to get that one down.
Yeah.
But
is John in New York still?
He was. He relocated to Florida.
Okay.
And then I went to University of the Arts in Philadelphia. Got to study with a wonderful drummer by the name of Mark DiGiani. At the time, he was the dean of students for the music school, and I studied with him, and I studied with, do you guys know who Jerry Brown is?
Mm-mm.
He was the longtime drummer for Stevie Wonder, and he's been with Diana Ross for like 15 years, still close with him. Yeah. Do you guys know who Jimmy Paxton is?
Heard the name.
He plays for the Chicks. He was with Stevie Nicks, Lindsey Buckingham. I studied with him when he was there. I studied with Marcus Baylor there.
Oh, wow.
I studied with a guy named Eric Johnson there. Yeah. And then I moved here, and I got to study with Jim Riley. I took a lesson with Ben Caesar, Tom Hurst, and Kevin Murphy. And I still take lessons here and there when I can, but you know, now it's just kind of like, not that I don't want to learn more. I definitely do. But I'm just trying to be really busy myself doing my own stuff, teaching this and that. So, but when I'm able to, I try to.
Yeah.
So.
So what made you decide to come to Nashville?
So one of my dad's close friends, do you guys remember bands like Creed, Evanescence, either? So my dad's close friend used to be the president and then owner of that label.
Oh, wow.
So I worked there my junior, senior, freshman, and sophomore year of college. I got to like see Sean Pelton like re-record drums, which was super cool. Got to meet him.
Yeah.
Just a lot of cool stuff happened there.
Is he still doing SNL?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, he's the guy. And so it was either for me to stay in New York, go to LA, potentially Austin or Nashville. And my dad's friend was like, "Hey, like if Jake wants to continue this further, he should check out Nashville." So I did. One of the weeks I was still in college, I remember missing a midterm. I did get to retake it.
It worked out.
But I fell in love with Nashville. The first thing I saw was Lower Broadway. Mm-hmm. And I was like, man, this is music like almost 24/7. I got to be here.
Yeah. Did you have that feeling when you walked down and you saw all the drummers by the windows?
In a sense, like, yeah. It was more of like, this is all music. This is all I want to do. And then when I came here to visit, there was a store in the Gulch called Two Old Hippies, which is no longer there. Yeah. And I popped into there and I started talking to the guy who was helping me. He was a drummer. And he's like, "Oh, you know, when you move here, reach out, we'll get coffee," did all that. But Mark had put me in touch with an alumni here. And I don't know if she's still here, but she invited me to a party on Music Row. This was like my second day. And so I went, talked to everybody I can. And this one guy was like, "Hey, I'm playing downtown tonight. Come sit in." I said, "Yeah." Stroke of luck, I'm playing these two songs, and I get off, and this very inebriated bass player walks in and says, "Hey, you know, is this your gig?" I said, "No, I just moved here yesterday." He goes, "Well, our drummer's leaving, and do you want to audition? We're holding auditions tomorrow." And I said, "Yeah, I'd love to." Did the audition, got the gig an hour later, started playing Broadway full-time the middle of my second week.
Wow.
Did it for 5 months. And then the guy that I had met at Two Old Hippies, he calls me my like fifth month in town, says, "Hey, I'm leaving this gig. Good foot in the door touring gig, nothing major. You should audition." So I did. I got that gig. Yeah. From there, did that for about 6-7 months. I knew that wasn't going anywhere. And at the time, I was taking a few lessons with Jim. And I explained to him the scenario and the situation. And he said, "Go to writer's rounds. This is where you meet artists, songwriters. They all need musicians." Yeah. I went to Revival, which is no longer at Tindred Fund in Mumbrian. But I didn't know anybody in there. It was super crowded. Just walked in right time. You know, all this luck they were talking about.
Yeah.
And I hear, you know, Luke playing his last song, "She Got the Best of Me." And I was like, holy fuck, this guy's got a voice and his song's incredible. And it wasn't like, oh, I just wanted to like just talk to him because I just loved what he played. So I went up to him after, spoke with him, and he goes, "Oh, you know, what do you do?" And of course, we both tell the story differently, but I told him, you know, "I play drums." And he goes, "Oh, I have a gig next week. I need a drummer. Do you want to play?" I said, "Yeah, I'd love to. Send me your material." I did my homework. I was the first one 30 minutes early, set up with all my gear on, you know, ready to go. Did my, I like to call rehearsal / audition. Nailed that. Did the gig. Nailed that. And then we hung out like once a week for the next, I don't know, 3 to 4 months. And then he called me after that and said, "Hey, you know, I want you to be my guy. Do you want to do this full time?" And I said, "Yeah." And I'm the only guy since then who has never missed a show.
That's incredible. Wow.
Yeah.
Holy cow,
I love that story.
That's awesome.
Because when you met Luke at that writer's round, I mean, he was nobody.
Nobody.
He had no.
He was popular on
no
Vine.
Label,
you know,
on Vine, right? Yeah.
You know, he had a YouTube channel, but no management, no label, no nothing, no number one. So
Vine.
Yeah. Wow. That's how you got popular. Vine. He tried out for The Voice, and they nixed him. And then I remember in 20, I think it was 19, we taped their finale. Which was like a very full circle moment for him, and I was like,
"Yeah, I bet."
Over here,
look at that motherfucker!
Exactly.
I love it. That's beautiful.
And there's so much there that I think we both would probably want to learn more about. But I was listening on the other podcast, and you were talking, and they were talking about how, like, you know, coming from Philadelphia, you weren't necessarily listening you weren't necessarily playing like country.
Oh, definitely not.
But like, yeah, right. Especially, yeah, being a New Yorker and like, but you, again, you did your homework and you were like charting. You would listen to the country radio and you charted like 10 to 15 songs a day.
Oh man, I remember. Yeah, the summer.
That was before you even moved here.
Yep, the summer before I moved here, I go on Billboard's top country 30 radio songs, and I would chart at least 12 to 15 songs a day. Because I thought, oh man, I'm going to be playing these downtown when I move here. I must have charted 150 to 200 songs just that summer. And I thought, well, also, this gets your charting up.
Yeah.
And I like to be very detailed to the point where I do a hybrid of a skeleton and a full-on chart.
Yeah.
And I'm like, if you got to serve the song, I'm playing exactly what the song, what's on the song. Mm. I want people to know, hey, man, this guy got it to a T. He's not making up any BS fills. Anything like that, he's playing the song how it is, and that's just kind of how I've always been. And I did that, and then man, I moved here, and it was like I played 6 of those tunes, and I was like, I had to chart out 100-something more songs of older country, and I was like, fuck, I'm gonna get carpal tunnel on my hand.
But at that point, you were already so seasoned because of the work you were doing.
Because of that, that's definitely incredible. So.
Yeah.
So.
And like you were listening to the hits, so you really
exactly.
Had such a
I was listening to all the different types, and playing along them already. So like I already got the vibe of like, because back then it was like country was like, it was bro country, but it was pop too. And it's like, if you could play rock, you could play that stuff too.
Sure.
Yeah.
Just solid groove. The fills aren't anything too complicated.
Like train beats, nothing to worry about.
No.
I mean,
no. You're not doing anything like anything crazy of a train beat. You're not playing the blues, And I think if you have a diverse of genres under your belt that you can play country music.
Yeah.
If you can play jazz, you can play anything.
Yeah. That's
is that where you studied primarily?
My college is a jazz school. So I studied jazz, I studied Latin music, I studied Afro-Cuban, funk. You name it, I studied it. And I play guitar, too.
Oh, wow.
Really?
I've been playing guitar since I was 13. I took lessons on that, too. And a little bit of piano. I play some bass. But I remember, just for the hell of it, I thought I wanted to minor in music ed. So I had to take a guitar class, and I aced it. And I took a percussion class, and they gave me an A-.
That's ironic.
Yeah, right? Like, what?
But I actually... Never mind.
It was, it was because I don't play mallets that well.
Mm. Yeah, it's everyone. Well, you say that a bunch. I mean, that's
everyone plays mallets. Yeah. But me.
No, it's not true.
That's my. I mean,
not
I did
many
full
people.
Percussion
I don't think a lot of people really do play mallets.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
Like a lot of the big guys that I know, they don't.
Jim plays mallets, Moyer, but like on a gig.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to like be there. Like, hey, like, why'd you? This is a side note, but like, I started playing cajon. At a Riders Round every Tuesday in like 2015 or 16 on Demumbrian. And this one girl, I'm not going to name names, but she had asked me, she said, hey, did you move to town to play cajon? And I was like, no. Nobody moves here to play cajon, honey.
I just played a 2-hour cajon set at the Cambria downtown.
And how did your hands feel after that?
My back.
Dude, your back.
It's funny, I had a gig that same night right after, full band. At the East Room, it was like a pop punk. So it was a good warm up, but
can I do a shameless plug?
I mean, it's
real
fun,
quick?
But
so yeah. I'm with Toga Percussion, and they make this snare conga cajon, and you stick it in. It comes, the cajon itself, and you put together a little basket, and once you set it in, you're good to go. It's super lightweight. You can sit on a stool like this, and it just doesn't hurt your back at all, and it's great.
Wow, yeah, the last cajon gig I played. I vowed to never play cajon again.
Yeah,
and I kicked a hole in it.
Oh, I remember one time we played we played this guy's 4th of July party acoustic, and we are, you're having fun, whatever. And I took the champagne bottle and started playing the cajon with it, and I put a hole in it.
Yeah.
And then I donated it.
Yeah.
I love it.
My back, my hands were both.
Oh, it's terrible.
This is a horrible instrument. I hate it.
I feel like I've maxed out the optimal. I have, two pedals, I have a tambourine, I have, all the accessories, shakers.
Yeah.
You have everything.
It's not going to get any better.
I mean, I once did a 4-hour cajon gig during CMA Fest not many years ago, and I literally asked for a bucket of ice after. I don't care what I got paid. I was like, I just need a bucket of ice.
Yeah.
My hands were on fire. My back was killing me. Yeah. It's the worst.
Yep.
So you're playing on Broadway. Were you also playing other gigs in town, or were you kind of putting all your eggs into the Broadway circuit?
When I first moved here, it was just Broadway.
Yeah.
And
did you have the goal, you're trying to meet, the next big artist, or just literally just try to get any kind of gig?
At that time, I was just I was just in the zone of playing. Yeah. You know, it wasn't like, oh, I'm looking for that next step right now. It just happened to be like, I'm playing Broadway, and then just networking is such a big thing. And I try to tell people all the time, it's all, and I got this from my teacher, John, it's all about the tip of the tongue. Someone knows you, like, hey, who should we hire for this? Oh, call him. Boom. You could potentially get that gig. Yeah. So that's what happened. You know, I met that guy at Two Old Hippies. He called me 5 months later while I was doing Broadway and said, hey, I'm leaving this gig. I think you'd be great for it. That's how I got that. Then it's like, you have to have the cojones to go out on your own and meet people. And that's how I met Luke, you know, going to a writer's round. I didn't know anyone there. Yeah. The only person I knew in town when I first moved here was my cousin who went to Vanderbilt. And he is not in the industry at all.
Yeah.
So I made all these connections on my own. And that's what you got to do. Yeah. And then, yeah, you know, you meet all these people, you meet friends, you get in your circles and stuff like that. But I think it's good to just know as many people as possible. Or if they know your name and they know, like, hey, he plays for so-and-so. We see he's not touring right now. Like, let's see if he wants to play with us. And most likely, if it's worth it, I'll say yeah.
Yeah.
I like the way you put it there. It's all about the tip of the tongue, because my experience here has been, obviously, there's a huge number of players. I'm like, and there, that's the thing is, you will be forgotten if you allow yourself to be.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you don't go out and you don't see people that you're still, quote unquote, alive.
Yeah.
And that you're playing and doing stuff, then people are going to forget about you. And it's like, I don't care how great of a player you are as well. If you have a bad attitude, no one's going to want to work with you.
Yeah.
But I think we all know that.
Yeah.
Which I feel like here that's more the case maybe than anywhere else. Because there are, I mean, I know people who work in LA and in New York who have attitudes, who are basically assholes. I'm like, how do you have a gig at all? I'm like, well, he's really good. I'm like, yeah, but he's a dick. So
what the hell?
Why is he working? It just doesn't work that way here. If you're a dick, you will not work.
No, and that's why it's like, I don't want to say it's no longer really the good old boys club type of thing. Because so many people moved here and it's like, yeah, there's friendly competition, but like, you still have to look out for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And what I love about drummers is the fact that, like, if we learn a new lick, we're not afraid to show each other.
Yeah.
Because we're all different. We're all different players. We're all going to play it somewhat differently. Whereas, like, guitar players or, you know, bassists maybe, or they'll play something and they'll hide it.
Yeah, right.
So.
Yeah. It's true.
We're a special breed.
We are. And that's why drummers are like a family, which is great.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Whenever I ask this guy, anytime I come up with some weird thing, I'm like, oh, try this. I just thought of this weird, whatever, obtuse thing. Give this a shot.
Nate's a prog guy, so he'll show me like something in 13 and applying it to your left hand. Okay.
So also you like Garska and
me too.
Halpern stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those guys are sick.
Yeah, I really.
Carrie.
Yeah, yeah. I really like to study with Matt Garska. Since he
lives here.
He does. I found out after his clinic that he lives like 10 minutes from me. So
that's convenient.
Like, let's
get coffee.
Let's hang out. Yep. Let's sit on a couple kids and throw some ideas.
I bet you he would. I don't know him, but I bet you he would.
If he can fit you in.
Yeah, for sure. I know him. He's got to be a busy guy. But I think from my mutual acquaintances to him, they're all like, yeah, no, I think he would actually really like to just hang out and play drums. I'm like, let's do it. I'm gonna make it happen.
You know what's funny to me? I get like sometimes phone calls from people or text messages. Usually it's phone calls, but it's like, hey man, I'm sorry to interrupt your day. I'm sure you're really busy. And it's like, when I'm home, like, I'm just playing more drums and I'm that busy. Yeah. Everybody thinks like you're on a huge gig and you're busy. And it's like, usually when you have the downtime, you're not doing shit.
Yeah.
For the most part, it's like you're doing stuff around your house. Yeah. You're maybe like practicing for fun. Yeah.
Living a normal working life. On
living a normal life.
Yeah.
Which, thank God for that.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
So, but I just think it's funny. People are like, oh, I'm sorry. Like, you're probably really busy. It's like, no, man.
No, I'm just a dude.
Just got done eating a slice of pizza.
Yeah. I'm really busy with.
Yeah, exactly. Look what Jake's really doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I guess that's true. Because even as you got here, I think you said something to that effect. I can't remember what that was, damn.
About what?
You're like, yeah, you know, thanks for making the time. You know, I'm sure you're busy. I'm like, That yeah. is an instinct to be like, yeah, yeah, you probably.
I think it's also, it's like a respect thing too. Like,
yeah, absolutely. You
know. Of course.
Yeah.
But when you're going to say, hey, like, you free this time? Like, yeah, it's better than sitting at home.
Right.
Yeah. I've already played enough drums today yeah. to be not have to play tomorrow. So,
yeah. 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 Like, well, I was just going to rewatch The Office, but.
yeah, right.
but I mean, it's the episode where they're talking about, shoot, what's that? I had it in my brain. Yeah. One where they're talking about not cultural appropriation, but that like cultural appreciation episode. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that one's kind of awkward. Yeah, let's do a podcast.
yeah. Are you an Office guy?
Yeah, I like yeah. it better though with Steve Carell than Ed Helms.
Oh yeah,
like mm-hmm. so much better.
Yeah,
I haven't like seen it in forever, but the show I somewhat recently got done of watching was every season of Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah. Love Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Yep.
Such a good show.
It's the GOAT.
Oh, yeah.
It will never be supplanted by another. You'll never have that 90s energy of like, you don't even have to have your lead actor be like a good actor at all. Because he's a terrible actor, but he's just like he's hilarious. And like he's just being like there's all these moments where he's doing something and he's kind of being in character, but you could see him just breaking character. I'm like, but no one cares because he's so funny. And Larry David's a genius.
I was gonna ask, do you watch Curb as well?
I've seen a few episodes. I haven't dug into that one as much, but
beats the earlier Curb seasons. They're still doing it. I think there's gonna be a new season.
It's just Seinfeld.
It's like hard to keep reinventing. Rules.
But, yeah. Well, then you know it's gonna be funny.
yes. yeah. Should I go?
I'm a sixth string playing somewhere. I guess.
Oh man.
So you mentioned that audition, rehearsal, the first rehearsal with Luke.
Yeah.
But you kind of considered it an audition, but it wasn't really. Like, you were the only drummer, right?
I was the only drummer, hence why I still considered it an audition. Because, like, they haven't played with me before. Yeah. He hasn't played with me before. Right. So I'm like, yeah, I'm rehearsing with the group. But I still have to do my job really well.
Yeah.
Because if I don't, then I'm like, well, this guy, he's out of here. Yeah. So, you know, one of the best things I learned in college was 30 minutes is on time. If you're on time, you're late. Yeah,
exactly.
So, and I've always been the guy who's early to, doesn't matter what it is, you know, type thing. So, yeah, I had all my gear ready, set up, you know, charts in case I needed them, and did that. And then I remember we played the University of Alabama. We played a frat house. And I was, you know, neon lights on the ceiling, and you know, I was the only one without a wedge, so I had to like go to use my ears and go off of what they were going off of. And you know, I had my charts with me, but like I scanned them, put them down type thing, and you know, played everything. And then the gig unfortunately had to stop because a kid let off the fire extinguisher. So
classic.
That was the end of the, I think we might have played like at least an hour.
Yeah.
And then that happened, and then we got all of our gear, and we kind of got.
So that was your very first Luke
like
tone.
like from the ceiling, or sprayed.
Sprayed.
Okay. Yeah,
that's it was definitely an accident. But I mean, you're at a frat house; everyone's obviously drunk,
right? Yeah.
So
wow, so that was your first Luke Combs gig. Did you leave that gig and be like, "What am I getting myself into?" Or,
no, not at all. I had an absolute Luke blast. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like we were doing, you know, originals, we were doing covers, and we were doing that for, you know. Essentially all throughout 2015 too. But you know, I think as well, like if you really believe in the artist and they believe in you, I mean, you have to see where it goes. You know, a guy like him, like he's such a great, humble, funny, you know, down to earth guy, and he hasn't changed one bit.
Yeah.
You know, and we're all like a huge family. Which is the best part about it.
Yeah.
Not just the band, the crew and all that stuff. You know, like, I talk to my tech at least once a week. Just, even if it's not drum-related stuff. I'm like, hey, man, like, how's your family doing?
Yeah.
So, but yeah, I mean, that was my first gig. It was a blast. And then, you know, we just hung out once a week for the next some odd months. And then we started touring, I want to say, like, April or May of 2015, full on, over 200 dates a year. You know, I had a day job then, too. I really disliked it, but I had to do it, so...
What was your day job, if you don't mind sharing?
No, not at all. I was a waiter at Chewy's.
Oh, no way. Wow. Okay.
And I did not take it seriously, because I definitely should have been fired after that second week. Yeah. Like, oh, what's in all the sauces? I'm like, do you like mild, medium, or hot? Here's a plate of them. Dip your chip in it and see if you like it. Or what's in this margarita? Do you like a margarita? Yeah, you can get it spicy or normal. Choose your pick.
I love it.
You know, I wasn't like a dick, but it was like I didn't move here to be a waiter. I moved play drums and do, you know, further my career with that.
Yeah.
And there were times I remember where I was like, hey, like I got a call out, like I'm leaving on a Wednesday morning for a gig Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and like, oh well, you know, if you can't get a shift, blah blah. I'm like, you don't get it. This is what I have. Like, this is why I moved here.
Yeah.
And sometimes, like, I'd be like on their Facebook page, like, hey, I'll throw someone $20 if they can cover my shift. That would happen, or I just don't come in.
Yeah.
This is even better. There was one time I wasn't there for the entire month of December because we were working, we were doing shows and stuff. They gave me the Employee of the Month award. I wasn't even there, which I think was hilarious. And then in 2019, we did this Off the Rails festival. Us and Sam Hunt were the two like major acts. And one of my old managers from Chili's was there, and she like reached out to me. She's like, oh, like, you know, it'd be so great to see you when you're done playing. And I said, yeah, sure, you know, whatever. So I met up with her, and, you know, she had some family there and stuff. And she goes, and she's like, now I know why you always had to like call out and stuff. This is truly incredible. I said, yeah, now you see why. She goes, that was amazing. I'm like, well, I told you the real reason. I wasn't BSing you.
Yeah.
So
that's amazing.
But
that's so funny.
Yeah.
I think, luckily, there's a lot of people here in Music City, go figure, that do have that in their head. They're like, yeah, I know that whatever job this is, especially in food service, is like, it's just a stepping stone. It's just a place saver while you are figuring out.
They do it in New York City. You know, guys who are trying to be on, or anybody trying to be on Broadway and musicals and all that stuff, they're all waiters and bartenders and stuff, just like here. You know, if you're trying to make it in music, if you're not doing the Broadway thing, you know, you're probably doing something within the food or, you know, bar industry in some way or another, or you found something else that you can make money for the time being before you get to the level you want to be at.
Mm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, we've heard this same story a lot. I think you've got to be willing to sacrifice part of that goal and part of that dream. Like you said, like you knew.
Yeah, you
like,
definitely
you,
do.
Like you weren't going to be working that job forever.
No.
Of course not. Not even a few months, probably. But like, you needed to do that, right? You needed an income.
And of course, you need to make money. You need to still pay your bills and all that stuff. Yeah. And, you know, you can't just rely on show by show.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd work like during the day, and then I would go afterwards, like on Monday, I'd go to Whiskey Jam. You know, I would go all the time there, Tin Roof, you know, mm-hmm. both, you know, just meet as many people as possible. Yeah. I don't go out nearly as much anymore. I don't have to, but I still enjoy going out and like seeing people and, you know, just like people you only see in a while and they're like, oh, hey, it's great to see you. How's, you know, you catch up and all this stuff. And
yeah.
So, and it's fun. You know, you don't have to go out and drink till, you know, your liver fails or you need to go to Daddy's Dogs and get a hot dog. But like,
shout out to my old workplace.
Dude, I can throw a rock to the location. It's literally right near my house.
Oh, okay.
I can walk there. And I haven't been there. I've only gone when I've been hammered at Losers. To the cart.
Yeah, I.
They could throw a rock at that place too, but intentionally.
I don't. I have no hate towards that.
Hey man, best hot dogs in town.
Yeah, no. I agreed. I went. I was looking for one last night. It was mid set, and thankfully, vocalist in the band I was playing with also plays drums, so I was able to. Like, I got to take a quick pee break and get some food. The kitchen was closed in Tootsie's, so I ran outside. I'm like, I'm just gonna find a hot dog. And Daddy's was not set up. I'm like, damn it. All right. Just found some guy on the street, and it was decent, but no Daddy's Dog.
Yeah. No.
Once you've worked there and you understand the difference in quality, it's definitely like, yeah, I can't step down. I go and I see these guys with these little dinky dollar dogs, and I'm like, oh, yeah. You're charging like the same price as a Daddy's Dog for this like cheapo hot dog. It's just what a ripoff. So shout out to Daddy's.
Yeah.
Locally made, freshly baked buns.
We gotta get them as a sponsor of this podcast.
We should.
Somehow.
They would be great.
I bet they would.
There's gotta be some connection.
I'll just talk to Sean.
Yeah, talk to Sean.
I'm like, dude, wanna sponsor my podcast, buddy?
I bet you they would.
Yeah, I think they would.
They do weird stuff, right? They've done worse.
Yeah. That's the thing. Sean.
They've done worse.
Sean, who's
he's daddy?
Yeah. Sean is like, his whole thing has been like, it's a very like stonery approach because he's a giant stoner. He'll just throw shit at the wall and like two out of the three ideas won't work. And then the third one will just blow up and work so well. And he just does that all the time. He's just doing that nonstop. Like, well, that didn't work. That didn't work. That worked super well. Cool. We're going to keep doing that. Forget about those other two things. And it just keeps growing. He's going to build an empire.
That's awesome. Good for him.
Yeah. So that's his goal. He wants to be the emperor of hot dogs on earth. And he will be.
On his way. Right?
Yes. Anyway, how did we get there? How the hell did we get there?
Broadway or
Broadway and talking about going out after, you know, you're doing your day job to go network.
Right. Yep.
One thing leading from drinking to hot dogs.
Yeah, that's true. Well,
so
and that's funny because that's how I got to doing what I'm doing now was I was networking while I'd be running the cart.
And anytime, smart.
Anytime I saw somebody with a guitar case, I'd be like, did you just do a session? Did you just play? Where'd you play? Oh, you played Whiskey Row? Oh, sweet. Yeah, right on. Yeah, I play drums. If you ever need a sub, here's my information. And they go to my Instagram and bam.
Yeah.
I remember listening to one of the podcasts, I think it was with Ethan, and you said how you left your card in a tip jug. Is that you?
That was Ethan that did that.
That was Ethan who did that. Okay.
Yeah, we were making fun. It was his birthday. We posted that clip.
Oh, dude.
When I heard that, I was like, oh, man, that's funny as hell.
So funny. Yeah,
he got roasted for that.
But, yeah, you don't do that.
No.
Yeah. Plus, no one uses business cards anymore. So there's that.
That's true. Yeah. Just show me your Instagram. Here I am.
Exactly.
I don't need to see your name on a piece of paper. I need to see you
People
play.
Throw that away.
Yes. That's true.
Have you guys
true.
Seen though? I actually have like a, it's like a business card, but it's got like a QR code.
I have seen those.
It's basically like a Linktree, you know?
Yeah, I've seen those. Those are cool.
So it's kind of cool. It's
that's like a good idea.
Kind of like a higher quality titanium card, whatever.
Yeah.
But I haven't used it too much, honestly, but it is cool. Yeah, I love that advice of just like, you got to show up.
You did?
You know, like in your case, you were on Broadway. Well, I mean, you too. You literally planted yourself on Broadway. You weren't yet sitting in, but you were super smart to do that and just like hand out your Instagram and talk to people.
It worked.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't be like overly annoying about it too. It's like, I'm sure you guys have heard of the word germing.
Yes.
I haven't. Germing.
So it's basically like, I think of it as like being a leech in a way. Like you're asking like, hey man, like you want me to get a gig, this, that, like, oh, you're playing a gig. Like, nobody wants that. But it's like, you know, if people see you play and then they're like, oh, like he can play, I'm going to call him for a gig next time. Or like, I remember one time there was a CMA fest where going back to Cajon, I pretty much lived at the listening room. I was playing Cajon there for like almost every artist there. And I was like, could I just put a mattress back there? Or,
love
you
it.
Know?
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I mean, the more people see you play, the better opportunity you're going to get to hopefully live out your dream of doing whatever it may be. It could be, you know, doing sessions if you're really good at that. Or like if you do want to tour on a full scale, you know, you got to be with an artist that you believe in, they believe in you. And like, you just got to ride that wave and, you know, say it takes a few years, you know, and they call this town a 5 to 10 year town. So you're with the artist and it's 3 to 4 years and you know, you don't want to like shoot up and then drop down, but you want that gradual, like a roller coaster going up. And then, you know, I think if your artist has a career of a Jason Aldean, Luke Bryan, Tim McGraw, Garth Brooks, all those guys, they've been around for 20 something years and they're still doing it.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like, if you're lucky to get an artist, like, I feel like I'm very fortunate to be with the artist I'm with, and I could see him having that same longevity of a career.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Eric Church as well, you know, George Strait. And I mean, hopefully most artists who love, they should be doing because they love what they do. And hopefully they all, or the ones who are going to eventually hopefully eclipse to that level, want to stay there. Or they're smart enough to know, like, hey, like, I might not be at the top for, you know, forever, but I know what to do to at least stay like balanced to where I'm not going to dip down all the way and people forget about me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
But I do think if you're with an artist and, you know, you got to stick it out for a few years, and then if what you want isn't coming to fruition, then you got to find another route. I have guys like, hey, man, like, you know, I'm not really sure what to do right now. I haven't played a gig all year, yada, yada. And it's like, you know, I hate to say it, but like, you know, you just got to keep hustling, or unfortunately, it might not just be for you.
Right.
And yeah. it sucks to say that, but not everybody's going to get that opportunity that they want to get.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, this city, I love the pieces, but is it oversaturated? 100%. But there's guys who strictly want to play downtown because they can make a really good living there. There's guys who want to tour. And, you know, you just got to find your niche. Or if you're lucky, you could tour. And when you're home, you can do the downtown thing. You can teach. You could do sessions, you know, if you get into that too. And, you know, my goal is I've been doing everything. And that's what I want to do. I love educating. I love teaching people. I love, you know, I love doing these clinics and master classes, especially afterwards when like young kids come up to you and they say like, hey, like, I really love that. Like, I'm 12 years old. What should I do? And you know, you tell them like, you know, like keep practicing, keep playing, keep taking lessons, you know, learn as much as you can. And then if you are able to go to school for music, I personally think you should go because you learn all different genres. You learn theory, you learn ear training, you learn musicianship. And like, it's all about what you put into it. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it's like after that stage, move to Nashville. But you have a long ways away because you're 12.
Yeah. Yeah. No rush.
But no rush, yeah. But it's gratifying. It's like, you know, I had the clinic I did in Denver. It was like, I played this beautiful Yamaha Phoenix kit. And afterwards, you know, I met the guy who bought it, and he was like, hey, I bought this before you even came here because they said you were coming and you're a Yamaha guy and I wanted to play. I wanted to play it after you did. I was like, man, that's really touching.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, can I buy that snare drum off of you? I didn't, but no, it was just like super touching. You know, all these people are like, man, I've been playing, you know, some guy's like, I've been playing drums for like 2 months. You know, what should I do to continue? And like, you know, what do you want to learn? I talk about like, you know, the importance of networking, how to get a gig, how to keep a gig. But then it doesn't matter if you want to, you know, say you live in a small town, you just want to play in a bar band. How do you even get there? And you go, you watch the band play, you know, maybe there's an open jam, go sit in. You do that over and over and over again. And then they can be like, oh, you know, he's really good. If we need a sub, we'll call him. And then that could lead to you being the full-time guy.
Yeah.
The only way to really make it in this industry, you got to live in Nashville.
And plant those seeds.
And plant those seeds.
Yeah.
Look, one of my best friends lives in L.A., Robin Diaz. He's been there forever. Monster drummer. He's been with Daughtry. He's played on all the Theory of a Dead Man records. Right. He plays on a bunch of sessions. He's done stuff for Keith Urban, Kelly Clarkson, you know, just a bunch of people. He's toured with Courtney Love, Hole, Live, Candlebox. I saw them here with him. And you know, he does a lot of work there. He's also from there, and he has his connections. I remember going out with him there, and, like, everyone knew who he was. And that's, like, that's awesome. You want to get to that point to where everyone knows you for who you are as a good person, great player, and all that stuff. And then it's, like, they also obviously probably know you because of the gig you're on.
Yeah.
But aside from that, they should be like, you know what? He's a good dude. You know, yeah. He's a good drummer. If I ever needed him or just someone of that caliber to play, I can count on them. Mm. Doesn't mean me, just someone of the same, someone who just loves to play. That's it. You know, it's like I play downtown, not because I have to, but I just love playing and it's right. fun.
Yeah.
So
that's so cool that you're still playing down on Broadway even today.
Yeah. I don't think anybody should knock it. It's like I was talking to somebody yesterday about it, and it's like, I get that the people maybe people downtown have the thought of like, oh, these guys are on these big gigs. Like, they don't have to play downtown. But it's like, you don't know that. Reach out and be like, hey, man, you want to play? Like, I know you probably already play a lot, but do you want to play just because you love playing? It's like, fuck yeah, I will.
Yeah.
Call me.
We're
I'll do
here.
It.
Like, that's what we're doing. Like,
yeah. I mean, dude, we had a rehearsal Saturday. I played for 8 hours that day. Did, 5 hours at the rehearsal and then 3 hours downtown.
Yeah.
And I had a fucking blast.
Tootsie's, which is where I mainly play at this point.
Which floor?
Mostly on the roof.
Oh, I think that's the best one.
Yeah.
I started at Tootsie's when I first moved here.
Yeah, I really love playing the roof there. It's fun. But the last week, the AC went out upstairs.
Oh, God.
And I got there, and as I was pulling my gear in, I was like, oh, this is really bad. And I looked on the bartender's faces. They were like...
dripping.
One of them actually got, like, she was so exhausted, she threw up. She, oof. Like, so, like, it got her. And the other one just went downstairs, and she just sat there for 10 or 15 minutes. I'm like, you okay? Yeah.
Yeah, it's brutal.
Oh, my gosh. But, yeah, that's, yeah.
I remember one of y'all's episodes, it was with Ethan. You guys were talking about triples and all this stuff. And when you guys were talking about that, I thought back. I was like, man, I once did a triple years ago. And it was like, I played the second floor of Tootsie's, and I was planning on going home between gigs. And then this guy was like, hey, man, can you play the first floor of Tootsie's right now? And I was like, yeah, sure. So it was like a 2 to 6, 6 to 10. That I played from 10 to 2:30 in the Rippy's rooftop.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this was a long day. And I was playing with a group that had like a manager. And the shitty thing was he would take money from the tip jar, which was awful. So I did three gigs and I barely broke $100. I was so mad.
Wow.
I was like, I'm never doing this again.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
I've done doubles. I've done doubles a long time ago, but like,
yeah.
But I was pissed.
Yeah. I did my first triple, a couple months back. And I was like, okay, I really focused on conserving my energy and really made sure that my technique was on point. So I'm like, all right, letting rebound do its work. I maybe pulled back on my energy like 20% for stuff. And I was like, okay, I'm fine. If I would have done this last year, I would have been destroyed. I was in just no condition to do that. I'm like, all right, cool. Now I've been basically playing 7 shifts a week. I'm like,
you're conditioned.
I'm conditioned. I'm like, it's everything. Everything's okay. I survived. I'm like, yeah, you know what? I could do this for the right bread if this was a thing, but it's not always the case.
For the most part, when I play downtown, it's a lot of just, I don't really, it's, I mean, you got to play the room, so I'm using like a lot of wrist action.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'm not like doing like full molar strokes, or if I do, it's like a baby one.
Yeah.
So, because you can't like, you hit a one good rim shot and it blows people's ears off.
Yeah.
So, just like, you know, but it still sounds great, but you're not like going like Kenny Aronoff, you know, Rich, beating the living crap out of the drum.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
That's one of the things I guess that Dave Elitch will do in a lesson is kind of see how hard and how loud you can hit. He's like,
have either of you taken a lesson with him yet?
No, I'd love to.
Me too.
Do you have his DVD or his new?
I have his living document online, which is updated as he has more information, but it was useful to me.
Are you guys watching him on tour with Weezer right now?
Yeah, I've seen clips.
It's so cool.
I've
seen those videos.
He sits so high up though. Yeah, it's like his legs are literally just like,
and he's a little guy.
Yeah, he's not a big dude.
He's tiny. Like, I've met him before, and he's shorter than I am. I'm like, you're like kind of just tap dancing with your toes on these things.
Yeah. But it's like, it's for his technique and for his anti-burying the beater thing. That's perfect. Like you can't bury the beater when you'd have to be very purposeful.
Yes.
Like, well, just learn. Although I have opinions on that. Obviously he argues that it never
sounds. Are you talking about burying the beater?
Yeah. I'm like,
I like to bury it depending on the situation. Depends on the song too.
But I do agree that it shouldn't be the only thing you're capable of doing.
No. Cause you do get a pretty big sound when you let the beater come off the head.
You should be able to do both. And like you said, pick and choose depending on the song.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Talking about that with Drew.
You were talking about, you just asked who, you know, if we had ever taken the private lesson with Dave, and I'd like to. You've taken lessons with all kinds of people. Who would you who would you like to now if you could sit down with some people?
Definitely Dave, and I'm trying to get that in the works. A buddy of mine from Florida took some lessons, and he was telling me about the Alexander technique.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, I don't know.
And that's something Dave uses. And
that's his whole, like, getting out of your own way thing. Yeah.
So I'd like to take just a lesson with him, even though I've now really dialed in ergonomically my setup, and I've been playing even more relaxed than I normally do. You know, you sit up straight, all this stuff, and I'm just, like, my wrists are just going. Like, I'm super comfortable. I still want to do a lesson with him. But I'd love to do a lesson with like Mark Shulman if that was doable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Man, Who else?
Maybe someone like Kenny.
Kenny, you know, I've reached out to him.
Yeah, good luck.
Still haven't heard back. You know, I know friends of mine who know him, and it's like,
yeah.
I'd like to take a lesson with Ray Luzier.
Oh yeah,
so I know him,
dude. Honestly, like
he's also open-handed, as you know.
Mm-hmm. I forgot that he's open-handed, man. He's so good. I just like perfect rock drumming.
You guys should check out I've taken he's just given them to me for, because I'm one of his best friends, but my buddy Robin Diaz, who lives in California, who I mentioned, LA guy.
Okay.
Monster player, great teacher.
Yeah.
Great teacher. I remember I was learning tunes for the previous record, and there was some cool fills that I was having trouble nailing down, practicing them, and I was going to his house before NAMM anyway, and I was supposed to fly out midday, and instead it was hey, fly out early in the morning, we'll hang all day, play drums, do this, did that, and he helped me immediately. That's great. Yeah. And he does virtual stuff too. But yeah, I mean, I guess just a few of those guys would be great to study from that are Ray lives in Nashville now, but non-Nashville guys.
Yeah.
Or even I think it'd be cool to it's maybe not a drumming full on at the kit lesson, but being able to sit down in a studio with guys who just play on records. Mm-hmm. Jerry Rowe plays on pretty much all the Luke stuff. And I've asked him before if I can come and sit in on a session and just watch him. He said, yeah. And I just haven't reached out again to do that. But he was like, hey man, you totally can. And I was like, that'd be a great experience. Cause I want to eventually get into doing that. It's seeing he's a beast of a player. Have you guys ever watched him?
No, I haven't.
So he's got a group with his wife called Friendship Commanders, and they did a concert at Exit Inn during COVID, and it's sludge rock, and man, this guy can play anything. You guys need to watch it, and he's just a monster of a player. And on this new record, there's a bar of double bass, and it's quads, and I don't play a lot of double bass.
Yeah.
So I texted him after I heard it, and I was like, hey, man, what's the foot pattern you did on this? And he was like, it was purely adrenaline. I was like, man, I hate you right now. But he was like, you know, just do this and do this. And I'm like, okay. And I was like, yeah, I'm not bringing a double bass pedal out. I'll just do it on a big floor tom. And it works. Yeah. So
that's cool.
Some of the guys I would like to sit down with, I want to sit down with, I plan to sit down with Marcus Finney.
He's a beast.
We're going to talk to him on this podcast.
Yeah, we'll have him on sometimes. We tried to have him on before, and it just didn't work out timing-wise. We had to move it around. We're like, all right, we'll try again in a couple months or whatever. Yeah. I actually played a gig at Rudy's.
Okay.
I think I've told the story here before.
Maybe, yeah.
I'm not sure, but I was like, I was playing, and I saw him walk in, and I recognized, it's Marcus. That's awesome. And I actually felt pretty good about how I played on the gig. I'm like, yeah, awesome. I was swinging pretty hard. This is awesome. I got done, took my stuff down. I go and sit down and say, hey, what's up? And we talk for a second, and then he set up, and he just sound checked for about 2 seconds. I was like, yeah, that's too bad. Too bad for me.
He played so well, too.
Yeah, I know. His swing feel was just, it was just so, it was.
He's a big jazz guy, too.
Yeah, it was
I love his play.
Instant stank face up for me. I'm like, yeah.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because we did Bottle Rock in Napa, last month.
Awesome.
And Pink was the Pink was, we were co-headlining with her.
Yeah.
And Brian Fraser-Moore is on drums for that gig now.
Yeah.
And I wanted to meet him so badly.
Holy shit, that guy.
I had messaged him the night before on Instagram. Did not hear anything back. And then I'm walking to the stage we're on to, just for the hell of it, watch Pitbull from behind. Because I saw him here in Nashville last year. He's great. He's really good. And I wanted to watch him. And as I'm walking towards our stage, really stuffing my face with dinner, and who do I see on the phone? It's Brian. And I, like an idiot, I go up and I'm like, excuse me, you're Brian Fraser-Moore, right? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, hi. And I introduce myself, super nice guy. And unfortunately, our sets crossed over, and I did not get to watch him play. I heard the last tail end of their set, and he sounded awesome. But
yeah.
But even those brief few seconds, he was such a nice guy.
Yeah,
he's a really sweet guy. I met him as well.
A monster player. Whew.
Yeah, good Lord. Talk about a freaking pro.
Yeah.
He's been doing it forever.
Oh, yeah.
Good night. Yeah, I met him at NAMM, and I must have been 23 or 24-ish. I don't know. And my friend Mason Guidry, who is a one of the best drummers on the planet, if you ask me. Guy is just like, if you haven't checked his stuff out, I'll show you some of him. He's an alien.
All right.
He's from another dimension. But he was just like, hey, this is my buddy Nate. And it's funny because I had just met Mason at that time. And I was like, you're introducing me to Brian Fraser Moore. He's like, blah, blah. Oh, where are you from? I said, I'm from Redding. And I meant, because I'm from Redding, California. And
okay.
He thought I meant Redding,
PA.
PA. And he's like, I'm from Philly. We fam. And I was like, yeah, sure. Nope. Not at all, but nope. I'll take it.
See, I should have been like, hey, man, I went to college in Philly. We fam.
Yeah, dude. Dude, but yeah, real chill guy. He was, you know, making jokes and whatever. I'm like, he said, I was like, what are you doing in life? He's like, I'm doing this, you know, I have a real hard time paying my bills. I'm like, yeah, you're a funny guy. You're a real funny guy. Yeah, Brian's cool guy. Yeah.
Talk to us about the Taylor Hawkins tribute show.
That was fun.
Speaking of other,
did you guys go to that?
I was there. Yeah,
I was playing.
I should have introduced myself. I knew Rich. I knew some of the other guys. We didn't really know about it in advance too much, and we were kicking ourselves because we wish we had set up like some type of interview backstage
to
ask every drummer like, you know.
So I got Rich and Jim on that thing.
Oh, okay.
Because they didn't know about it, and when I had coffee with Rich to talk about clinic stuff. Yeah. He's like, oh, what are you up to? And I was like, oh, I'm doing this Taylor Hawkins tribute. He goes, what? I'm like, can you get me on it? I was like, yeah, let me just send a quick text. Did that, and then I don't remember where I saw Jim. I saw him somewhere, and I told him about it, and like, I got him on that somehow too. But it was, Taylor, one of my biggest influences. Man, I remember exactly where I was when I heard about his passing.
Yeah.
And it just crushed me, man. I'm fortunate enough to have seen the Foo Fighters twice. Oh. One time here on the Broken Leg Tour. And I wanted to, when Brian messaged me about it, he's like, hey, like, I really want you to do this. Are you in? I'm like, yes. So he's like, choose your songs. So I chose two. And then he was like, hey, there's like extras if you want to play one more. So I was like, yeah, sure. And I wanted to do it justice, just like he would do it. So I got into every little nook and cranny. And, I mean, I hope I played it to a T. So
what songs did you do?
I did My Hero. I did No Way Back and Rope.
Those are three fantastic choices.
And those are, like, three of my favorites. And
were there, like, other drummers choosing the same songs, or how did that get?
I think so, because someone was like, oh, I wanted to do this one. I was like, haha, I beat you to it. But it was an overall great night. It was really cool.
It was a special night.
It was a special night, and it was really great to have like just a room full of like people who like love Taylor Hawkins, love the Foo Fighters, and just a bunch of great drummers in one room. And I honestly wish they held it at a bigger venue.
Yeah, definitely.
So, and I said to Brian, I was like, dude, you know, even cooler is if you know you can't get his kit, but if you set your kit up like his. He did not do that, but that'd been really cool to do that. So, but no, it was a great night.
They didn't actually.
I know. Just don't listen to me, Brian. Okay, I don't know good ideas. but no, it was a really fun night, and you know, I'm curious to at some point see who's going to take over for that slot.
Yeah.
I personally think it's be Josh Freese,
big rock guy.
Yeah. He plays. He's filled in for Weezer. He's done.
Nine Inch Nails,
Devo,
Avril Lavigne.
He's like one of the biggest rock guys in LA.
Yeah. He also is the drummer for the Perfect Circle.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
That's if you ask me. That's like.
Didn't he do the Offspring as well?
I think so. Yeah.
It's a lot.
Yeah, he's a hoss. Yeah. Josh is a monster.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean that night was just it was really special.
Yeah.
And. You know,
it's cool. It seemed like every drummer played exactly like the record.
I hope so.
As a tribute, you know.
Yeah,
it was cool seeing. I think that was the first time seeing Jim too.
Yeah,
and he's like old school. He had the headphones on.
Yep.
And he just freaking he threw the chart afterwards.
With him. Yeah.
He nailed it. Yeah, I was like,
it was you know Ben Satterly.
I know the name. Yeah.
So I was sitting down with him during that, and
love to have him.
Ethan
on.
Played on that.
Yeah, Ethan played on that. Yeah. I remember seeing him.
He crushed it. Yeah.
He said hi to me, and I totally forgot. Because I only met him one time, and I felt so bad. Ethan, I'm sorry. But I was talking with Ben. He's like, man, there's one song that I really wanted them to do, and they didn't do it. And it was the one that they tracked here at Zach Brown's old studio. They didn't do that one. And I'm like, why wouldn't you have that song on the list? They recorded it here in Nashville.
Interesting. Yeah, right? What song was that?
I didn't know that.
I don't remember the name of it. Yeah. I have to look it up.
They do All My Life?
Oh, yeah. They did all the hits. The Pretender, they did Best of You.
Everlong. I mean, yeah,
sorry, I'm thinking Best of Me because we have a song called She Got the Best of
what's
Me.
What's the one, Walk or something?
Walk. Of course, Dango did Everlong.
Dango crushed it.
Dude, I remember I played that song in my senior recital. I sang and played the drums.
Oh, wow.
Whoa.
Talk about.
I didn't know you sang.
I did my best.
Yep.
But
you don't sing with Luke. But
we have enough singers and enough guitar players in that group.
They don't want you sing.
I don't want to sing.
You don't need to.
Listen, they want me to sing Creed. I'll do that all day long. Creed. But no, I'm there to hold it down and bring energy.
Oh yeah.
So, but no, that was a fun night to have all those drummers in the room. Everyone's a different player to see how everybody approaches the tunes. So much fun.
Yeah.
So
you mentioned Taylor is one of your biggest influences.
Mm-hmm. Him, Dave Grohl, Stuart Copeland.
Yeah, I love Stuart. What have you kind of taken away from specifically Taylor and the Foo Fighters?
I mean, gosh.
Hit drum hard.
aside from hit drum hard, he always had great ride rhythm patterns, with rope and his grooves were very distinct in their own way. And, you could hear a song and be like, that's Taylor Hawkins.
Yeah.
Or, same thing with, Dave Grohl. I just watched something with him. The Smells Like Teen Spirit, he took that from the Gap Band.
Yeah. Which I never would have...
Me either.
...connected those dots.
Nope.
I saw that same thing. I was like, oh, my God, that's what that is.
And, Taylor, he's... I watched something with him when he was with Alanis, and he might not have played those parts exactly, but he made it his own, and he made it more of a rock song, and you could tell it's him because he just has that feel and that style of, I am a rock guy, I hit the drums hard, but I also have this smoothness to my playing. So yeah.
I can't believe he's gone either. It's crazy. It's too bad.
It really is weird. I would be being disingenuous if I said that he had been a major influence. I'm like, but I did love his playing.
I think
great choices.
I think for anybody our age or just in general who likes the Foo Fighters, you don't have to love him, but likes him, his playing bleeds into everyone's playing in some way or another.
Yeah. It's true.
I think he's one of those guys, similar to Travis Barker, which you talk about a lot, who just kind of transcends, mm-hmm. are able to impact generations. Of course, the artists they play with and the band is a big part of that, too.
One of my other heroes is Ringo. Ringo, why? It's because that guy played the damn song.
Yeah.
And the way he played his hi-hat was so unique. Yeah. And, everybody loves Bonham. Yeah. Everybody loves Bonham. I love Bonham, too. But Ringo and Bonham are two different people, two different players.
Yeah.
And the way Ringo played, he really served that song.
Yeah.
So.
And that's the thing about him. He had a unique voice that made the song what it is.
Yeah.
His identity is obvious when he plays. And I was asked a while back, I'm not going to name who I was asked about, but it was about a certain player for a large rock band, and they're like, are you into his playing? I'm like, no. And it's not that he's a bad player, it's just that I feel like there is another 1,000 people that would have played it the same way. But if you look at someone like Ringo, no one else would have played those songs that way. Was that. So anytime someone's like, well, Ringo's really basic, I'm like, yeah, but no, he was real basic, not with basic the touch of being very strange.
Yes. Yeah, and you know what?
Those fills.
Playing simpler is better.
Yeah.
The less notes, the better.
Just gig, right?
Yeah, man, meat and potatoes. I see guys do chops, and I'm like, it's not going to get you a gig. It's going to get you fired. You want to make money doing this? Play meat and potatoes, baby.
Yeah. Depending on the gig.
Yeah. Play the song of what needs to be played.
Yeah.
But when you do the fills, either if you don't remember exactly like the record, do something close.
Yeah.
Or do like the record.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah. If there's a thing that exists that you're playing totally unlike, then you're kind of being an asshole. Like I was explaining.
You're not playing to the song, man.
Yeah, I was there. I got another guy that will go unnamed, but an LA cat who is just like known for being wild. There was a story I was reading from this guitarist who played with him, who was just openly calling him out. It was like, yeah, he played like 5 times as many notes as are on the record, and he played twice as loud as he should possibly be playing. And we finished the first set and just were like, hey, man, shut the fuck up. What's your problem? Yeah. Like, stop it. You can either, like, half the notes, half the volume, or we're not playing set two. Like, man, I can't even imagine doing something like that.
Yeah.
Some people are just crazy.
Some people don't know how to play to a room.
Yeah.
That's huge. Yeah.
Some people are there to play for them and not for...
Oh, 100%.
That's not a conversation with the band.
No, not at all.
So speaking of that, I mean, how has it been adjusting to... I mean, now you're playing stadiums, arenas. How has that adjustment been, like playing from Broadway?
So,
probably, I mean, playing the same music, but now you're playing in a much bigger room. And
yeah, I mean, playing... You know, especially stadiums. Of course, there's mics on the drums, all that stuff. You still got to hit hard, though. You know, hit hard, but when you have the right technique and all that stuff, you'll be able to get the right sound out of your drums, too. So you're not just hitting hard, but like if you're hitting, you know, the right way, then you're going to sound good. Your drums are going to sound good. They're not going to be like, man, he's hitting the crap out of that snare drum and it sounds awful. No, he's hitting this crap out of that snare drum and it sounds great because of his technique. Mm-hmm. And that's just something, you know, that I think anybody should work on. And the same with arenas. It's like, you know, even though if they're enclosed, you're still playing for 20,000 people, depending on the size of the arena. You still got to hit hard.
Yeah.
You know, you can't hit like...
Even though the drums are mic'd up and amplified so much more, you're not playing less.
No, that's why there's a front of house guy. Yeah. You know, it's like they're there to mix the band. Yeah. If you're hitting too hard, they'll do their adjustments.
Well,
you play for the song how it needs to be played. When I do Beard and Broke My Heart, I hit the living shit out of those drums. Or like Cold as You or one of those heavier songs, I hit the living shit out of it. Like I'm trying to put a hole through the kick drum head or I'm trying to break my snare batter head. Luckily, neither of those things have happened.
Yeah.
But when I play those songs, I hit like I'm really, they owe me money.
Okay, I have to ask. There's a video that I think it's from May on your Instagram. It's like... I think the caption was when the bashing begins. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, when Luke and I hit that China cymbal.
Then, like, I think you kicked one of the techs like throws the cymbal. Like,
oh no, Luke threw it over.
Oh my gosh,
love it.
Is that every set or
him throwing it over?
Or just
the bashing?
Both. Yeah, I mean
the throwing over. No.
have you seen this?
No, I haven't seen
this. We'll pull it up after.
So the bashing began last year, and my China cymbal is still intact. There's a small crack. But it's super warped and it sounds amazing.
What song is that on?
Beer. It's the end of Beer. Okay. So I give him a drumstick that I was playing, and then he takes. I'll give him one or two, and he'll just wail away. And it's like he's hitting one side, I'm hitting the other side, and then he'll just throw the sticks up. They don't even go to the crowd.
Is that the last chorus? Or the
very
outro,
end of the song.
The instrumental.
Or? Yeah, the outro. Yeah. And it's a blast. Yeah. And there was one time where last year, so I used cymbals on my cymbals. And he pulled the stand over, and the cymbal came right off the stand. And remember, it's cracked, it's dented, and it rolled off the stage and almost took some girl's head off. And he was like, hey, like, let's give that cymbal to the girl. And thankfully, my tech, Dan, saw that. And he was like, no, you can't give that away. And he was like, why? He goes, because you can't just buy that at Guitar Center or Sam Ash. He goes, really? And he was like, yeah. So, like, we got a few Sabian B8s as backups, and we used one the next night.
Yeah.
And remember, he and I were bashing away, and it broke right from the cup, and you saw everything, the rest of the cymbal just drop on the stand, and I just played the cup the rest of that song. Just
oh,
like,
my ding, God.
Ding.
You have a B8 just for that one song?
We have
so
an extra in my bag, but we've been using the one that is essentially destroyed because I do have a backup of the 21-inch, and then I carry I have a B rig out too, so I carry a 19-inch Holy China as well.
Yep.
So we have a few.
Talk about, that's a true definition of a throwaway cymbal, right?
Yeah.
I mean, man, this cymbal, it holds up. It really does. But yeah, there was, when we did Jazz Fest this year, we did the bashing, and he pulled the sand over, and I guess a cable from that and my floor tom were connected, my big one, so they both went, and thankfully neither of them actually fell, so they're nothing is a scratch or anything like that. But yeah, the crowd loves it.
Yeah, of course.
You know, but just reading some of the comments on like Instagram of like a video, because it's just funny, man. It's like, oh, this is not like, you know, country or a rock show or whatever, and it's like, it's for the fans' entertainment. Like, shut up.
Yeah,
you know,
but it also is. I mean, you're playing.
It is. Rock country. It is,
that's,
exactly. Yeah,
that's the vibe. You know, and who are they to say it's not?
And it's fun for them to see. They're like, oh, look at that! Like, they're beating the living crap out of
that
symbol.
Shit you remember, you know?
Exactly.
Yeah.
You want to give the fans something to remember the show by. Be like, hey, that was one of the best shows I've seen. You know why? Because he's an incredible singer. He sounds just like the record. The band's great, and then you tack on, he's beating the living crap out of the symbol. Let's see if it explodes.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Yep, that's true. I can confirm that.
Even that, it's like, will he throw me the drumstick he's using? You know, people get a rise out of that
stuff.
It's
like, oh, Luke has a new album out. Maybe I'll buy it. You
know? Yeah, exactly.
There is this band from my neck of the woods called The Americas. It's these two guys, guitar player and a drummer, monsters. The drummer's name is Casey Dietz, and he's... Oh my God, he's so good. He's so creative, and he hits so hard. I remember being at those shows, and every time he'd hit the kick, it felt like I was being hit in the chest. He's just crushing it. Mm-hmm. And a super unassuming looking guy too. But I will never forget. I think it was the first or second time I ever saw them. First of all, again, he's hitting so hard, and in the middle of the set, out of nowhere, he just grabs his crash cymbal, holds it, and he just starts hitting it with as hard as he can over and over. And then he bends it in half throws it on the ground. And I was like,
you got work to do then.
I mean, that just sounds like anger issues, my friend.
It was really something.
Sounds like he had a tough day.
Yeah. I was like, what? I'll never forget it. Yeah. It was so.
Is there a video of that still?
I wish.
Yeah, I'll have to see.
There's one guy that might have a video of it. I should find it. But God, that thing, I'm like, that energy, that moment will never
leave. You remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, why don't we get into your home studio and recording ventures? Was that a pandemic project or?
Yes and no. Yes, because I really needed it, because I'm in a shotgun tall and skinny house to where my neighbor is only 3 feet away from me. Oh. So I had originally had his Mitch from Audiomute, his sheets that you guys have here, and... You know, you're in the house, and the structure of these houses are not made the greatest. So I didn't realize how much my neighbor could hear. Then after that, I got a room here for a little bit, and then I had reached out to Mitch. I actually did a podcast with one of my good friend's fiancés, who he did a podcast with Mitch. So I got to meet Mitch, and then from there... Went through a few iterations, planned when he could come stay with me, and we knocked it out in 3.25 days, and it is life-changing.
Yeah.
The room is like the cleanest room in Nashville for recording, I personally think, mm-hmm. and I use it all the time.
Yeah.
But it's funny because during the pandemic, I was doing so many sessions and teaching from my house. This was before I had this beautiful studio in. Now that I have the studio in, I haven't done a single session this whole year from my house.
Wow. Funny how that
I
works,
teach from right? my house, but I haven't done a single session yet.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I've been doing like sessions at a producer's house instead, but I'm like, come on, man, just let me like track from my house one time. Yeah. I have this amazing room. Please.
I think I've seen some photos. It looks killer.
Yeah, it's awesome. Yeah.
Have you always been into recording, or is that like, have you taught yourself the past few years?
I've been into recording since I was like 21. I mean, yeah. I took a recording class in college, so I've been into it since then. And the studio they had there was not the greatest, but it worked. And then I started writing my own material when I was like 20, 21, recording myself all the parts, and I really got into it. And since then, I don't record myself a lot now, but I do record myself for fun here and there. Just, you know, you got to make sure if you want to do the session stuff, the velocity of all your hits are the same. You know, one of the best things I learned about recording is you don't have to beat the crap out of your cymbals for them to sound good. You hit them wider and they're more musical, you know. And I do that from time to time when I'm just like at home sitting around doing nothing because everybody thinks we're busy. So I record myself, or I'll just sit down and play drums freeform and see what I can come up with, or, you know, just go over tunes, or, you know, go on YouTube and play to songs I enjoy. Yeah, I still go through books and stuff like that, but, you know, for the most part, it's like, yeah, I always want to become a better player and stuff, but you're in the long run, you still have to play what's on the gig. You know, you can learn all these crazy chops, and I've been messing around more with like adding rudiments into my fills at home, mm-hmm. but you can't use that on a gig. You can't use that downtown. If you're playing maybe a Lady Gaga or a Miley Cyrus tune or a Justin Timberlake song or a Bieber tune, sure, go for it.
Yeah, you have to really try to put that in, if you like.
Yes. But you also, if you know how to do it well and to make it seamless and you land right back on the one, then cool, do it. But if you're doing some over-the-bar line stuff where you're going to mess up the band, maybe shy away from it. So,
but yeah. That's...
Well, I mean, it's like, we talked about this before, it's all relative, right? So I feel like chops come out because you're playing super groove, or you're not chopping the whole time, but then that one awesome fill you do, then
and it can work,
you know.
Yeah, but it's like, if you do it,
but if it's all you're doing like that, like
if you're doing it throughout the course of the song when you are meant to do fills and you do those in that area, then it's just like, okay, we know what's going to happen.
Yeah,
it's predictable.
Exactly. Same thing with like a drum solo. If you go all out first, then you have nowhere to go.
Yeah, you got to build it.
The whole thing can't be that, you know.
Yeah, unless you're Vinny.
Unless you're Vinny.
Or Weckl or
Bozzio or Lockerman.
Yeah. Dude, Bozzio's kid, like, I feel bad for whoever has to set that up.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. I used to tech for Virgil Donati, and he talked about...
Dude, that must have been awesome.
It was. It was the coolest. And he's a great dude. Like, finding out that your hero is, like, a dope person is great, because they're always like, yeah, don't...
But it's like, none of these guys have a reason to be, like, rude or egotistical, because they all came from where we came from, too.
Right.
You know, it's like, I would love to meet Kenny Aronoff and, like, just talk it up with him, but I know he's such a busy dude that's probably not going to happen.
Is he, though?
I'm sure. Listen, if he does, I think he does sessions, like, crazy amounts in L.A.
Yeah.
I mean, he's been doing sessions forever, but it's like, I'm sure he's constantly session.
I just figured I'd apply the same logic.
I wish. I mean, I know someone who knows him, so if they could put me in contact, that'd be great.
I'm sure it'll happen, but eventually.
Yeah, maybe.
You know, especially if you're out there, if it's like the timing works out.
That's true.
But so.
But he talked. I was gonna say, he talked to me a little bit about, it was like some show where Bozzio's kit was set up, and like they were tearing down 3 hours after the fact.
God, it's awful. I know we're getting super off topic when it comes to studio talk, but
we'll get back to it.
One of the coolest so far moments of someone saying something drum-wise to me was twice, and it was by the same guy. In 2019, we did the Aspen Jazz Festival opening for John Mayer, and Aaron Sterling was on drums. And I got to briefly talk to him before the gig, and then, because we don't have each other's numbers, hint, hint, just kidding. But after we played, he watched like a bit of our set, and he voice memoed me on Instagram and said, hey man, like, you are perfect for the gig. You played like so incredibly well. Your groove was right on point, super in the pocket, all this stuff. Fast forward to this past year in February, we're doing the Daytona 500 for the second year in a row, and the service out there is pretty spotty. But I happen to hop on Instagram, and I see he's there. And I reached out to him before, and, like, if I reach out to him now, like, he'll get back to me and stuff like that, and which is – I appreciate it. And – but I remember he watched our set, and he texted me after and was like, you know what, you guys mind if I pull it up and read it to you verbatim? because I think you guys will get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
I still get a kick out of it. Oh, here, he said, I'm at Daytona Race. You sound like a golden god. If those aren't tracks, then your drums sound better than any drums in the history of planet Earth. and then I said, you know, thank you, blah, blah. I said, no tracks at all, thankfully. He said, you guys murdered it.
Man.
Yeah.
What a freak. Like, what a compliment.
And then, like,
you sound like a golden god. Right?
And I asked him, because
I would die if Aaron said that.
Yeah, I pretty much did die. Yeah. I put on my story and I died. And, you know, I saw him when he was in John Mayer, when he came to town recently. And I wasn't sure if Aaron was on the gig, so we were talking back and forth. And he's like, yeah, I'm playing the show. And I was like, man, like, you're good to just get coffee and, like, catch up. And he's like, I can't right now because I have to do studio stuff, balance family time. And it's like, I get it. Yeah. He's like, but I definitely want to get coffee with you, you know, when I'm free. I'm like, awesome. And I asked him, I was curious. I was like, you know, what snares are you using? He sent me the whole list the five snares he uses on the Mayer show.
Wow.
And he brings out, like, five others, too.
Yeah.
But, dude, such a nice guy. And that was one of the coolest, like, by far, you know, most humbling compliments.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
And I was like, is this real life right now? Like, this has happened twice by the same guy. And I'm like, he's an idol too, like, for all of us. Like, the guy's just a monster of a player. But I would also love to take a one-on-one lesson with him, or once again, just sit in a room with him while he records.
Yes. I think that would be the most valuable.
100%.
Just let me watch you actually work.
Yeah. And, like, how do you think of what to play in these different sections? And when I did that class with him, he said he thinks of each section in different colors, which I think is really interesting.
Mm.
And I'm like, wow, you know, that's a, you know, odd but great way to think of the sections of the song.
Yeah. Wow. Like, purposefully making it like a synesthetic experience.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, yeah. We're heading into green.
Yep.
Here it comes. Yeah. Oh, wow. I love that.
That's cool.
Like, green's pretty big. Yellow's pretty down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Purple's in the middle. Purple's like your bridge.
Right.
I would like to know exactly how he thinks in that regard. That is really interesting.
Yeah.
I guess just back to recording quick.
Yeah. Sorry, we got off on a huge tangent.
It's all good. This is awesome. I love all these behind-the-scenes stories. Did I hear something about, like, you have, like, a kind of a collective that you have with, like, the bass player from, like, you kind of market yourselves together when people need session players?
Sort of. I do. I've been trying to do that with our bass player.
Yeah.
Like, we're working on doing clinics together.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, everything we can do as a rhythm section, we're trying to do. Like, we can be playing Broadway. The goal is to do sessions together, clinics and master classes together. Anything we can do as a unit, we want to do.
Super smart.
And I have another two good buddies of mine who's a guitar player and a bass player as well. In the beginning of COVID, we were all three of us, not the bass player I played with live, but these two other guys, we were all doing sessions together from my house. And we still do that when we can, but right now, not as much work has came in. So, but I'm like, if I can get myself in with these guys, and then if I can do the stuff with my actual rhythm section partner, why keep myself to one person?
Yeah.
You know? The more work, the better. But I know there's more of a chance of he and I, because of who we play for, getting something.
Yeah. And the power in numbers.
Right.
Yes,
that's power in numbers. Smart to market yourself like that.
Mm-hmm.
Hires Luke Combs rhythm section, you know, I mean.
Yeah, you're going to get a great product.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we do clinics, master classes, because, like, with the master classes and clinics, it's like, you could do them at college universities. You could do them at music stores. You could do them at high schools. It's like, all, wherever you do them, the people are going to benefit.
Yeah.
You know, if you do it at a college, at a music school, you're going to be able to give the insight knowledge of your like, I'm living it. This is if what you guys want to get to. You got to first move to Nashville. Then these are the, you know, you don't tell them everything, but you tell them the key little important pieces for them to at least have a roadmap to get to where they potentially want to go. But then it's in their own hands. You know, I still have guys who are new to town. Drummers reach out and be like, hey, can we get coffee? Can I pick your brain? Sure. I'll gladly do it, you know, but I can't tell you, like, every single thing. Yeah. You got to do it on your own.
It's kind of like what Nico was telling us about Ableton. It's yeah. Like, you know, if you've never even downloaded the software, like, this isn't going to work. But if you know what you're doing and you just need help with some advanced things,
yeah.
Again, like, you've already put in some of that work. You got to give something there. You can't expect it to just be handed to you.
Yeah, you can't hold someone's hand through it. You can tell, you can give them some certain expectations of what to do, what not to do, but then they got to go do it themselves.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, why come to you if what they're looking for is something at the most foundational level?
Be like, well, yeah.
Come to me after you can stand. When you stand on your own 2 feet, then I can help you with your next steps.
That's, yes.
Yeah. Otherwise, you'd be. There are other resources that are more readily available to you.
Mm-hmm. But even if it's like playing Broadway, it's like, I've been there.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, this week, dude, go downtown and you might not sit in the first time or second time. But if you go the third time and they see you're there, they might let you sit in.
Yep.
And that's what you got. You got to just repeat the process till you finally get something.
Persistency is huge, right?
Yep. Persistency is key. Yeah. I remember the first time. So I met Rich for the first time at NAMM in 2013. And he gave me his number then. He's like, hey, reach out to me when you move to town. And I did. And it took us, like, I moved to town August 6th of 2013. And I don't think we grabbed coffee till November or December. Remember that day, we were sitting in a Starbucks in the area where he is. And he was like, you know, you're going to make it in this town because of how persistent you are. Mm-hmm. And he said, do you know to run tracks? And I wish they taught that at colleges. I wish they taught that at the music school. I'm grateful that we don't. And that we never will. Yeah. But at that time, he was like, hey, do you run tracks? I didn't. And if I did, he said, man, if you did, I have a gig for you. I could have had a gig, I don't know, fourth, fifth month in town.
Yeah.
Playing for I don't know who. But you know what? Yeah. Life works in the way they're supposed to. Yeah. And I'm glad it didn't work out because I had these other experiences. And now I get to play with, you know, some of my best friends, brothers in the entire world and do it all the time and grow. We all, a bunch of us have grown together. We've grown from a 15 passenger van and playing tin roofs around the country to doing now stadiums to doing, you know, SNL and all these awesome TV spots that none of us were like thought we'd probably ever do, or we didn't know we'd get to that point. But it's like when I heard we were doing SNL, I was like, no fucking way. Like being from New York and stuff, like especially. You watch that show growing up and you walk in the studio and you're like, damn, it's small, man. But it was so cool.
It felt so big when I was watching.
Like doing that, or like I remember our first TV spot was 2017. We did the Today Show and my parents were still living in New York and they got to come and they sat on the couch behind the cameras watching us do it live. And that was probably one of the first moments with myself and having my family there to where it was such a full circle, humbling and special moment.
Yeah.
The other was doing Red Rocks on Mother's Day, which they got to come to.
Okay.
And then last year in 2018, we were direct support for Aldine and we did Madison Square Garden. But last year we did two nights headlining back to back there and they got to come to both of those two.
Yeah.
So that was super cool.
Wow.
Yeah. And then eventually they'll come to a stadium show.
Yeah.
But
yeah, I can picture what you mean about SNL, like, especially because I would watch and you would always look forward to the musical acts.
Yes, 100%.
Because like, if they're on SNL, they're going to be something special.
Yeah.
Tell us more about some of those TV spots. I know you also did the Thanksgiving.
We did the Thanksgiving
football game, right?
Halftime show last year at the Cowboys Raiders game, which was super cool.
So
like,
cool.
We got to be there the day before, and like, while they were setting the stage up, we were throwing a football in the field and stuff and just having a blast. We were doing one on one. So, like, there was a time where like Luke was the quarterback and I was playing offense, another guy was defense, and then I was defense and he was offense. It was just so much fun. And
it's like little boys again.
Yeah, it's like little kids. Like, but like you're literally throwing a football field on the Cowboys, you know, field.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the next day, it's game day. And we were just recently in Dallas before that. And Ezekiel Elliott came to our show and we all got to meet him and stuff. And this was like 2 weeks prior. And then fast forward, day of the game, like a few of us have field passes if we've got to go early, which I did because I wanted to soak it all in. And, you know, he's warming up and he sees me and he walks over, comes, gives me a hug. He's like, hey, man, how you doing? Like, great to see you again. You know, you crushed at the show, blah, blah. You know, thanks for being here. And it's like, damn, man, no problem. It's like, I kind of also have to be here, but like, you know, thanks. I can't wait to see you crush it. And like, it was just cool. Like, have that camaraderie. And it's like, doing this, I got to meet, like, you know, it's like when athletes meet musicians, they find it super cool. When we meet athletes, it's, and I'm a huge sports fan. So like, that's really cool to me. Like, I got to meet, are you guys baseball fans?
Yeah, I'm New York sports, New York, Yankees,
but
Giants.
But, like, you know, like, big name guys, like, you know Bryce Harper?
Oh, yeah.
So we played in Vegas last year, and one of our guys who, he kind of sets all the rooms up, it's like, one of the hardest workers on the tour, loved the guy to pieces. I was standing under the stage, one of my best friends and his girlfriend, and he walks down, and I see this woman, and then I see this guy, and I knew immediately it was Bryce Harper. And he goes, "Hey, man, this is Bryce." And I was like, "Yeah, man, I know who this is. It's Bryce Harper." And he's wearing, I believe he's wearing a Yankees hat, too.
Yeah.
Which was awesome. I was
what
like,
team
dude.
Is he on now?
He's on the Phillies.
Okay, because he was Nationals.
He
right?
was the Nationals. He's on the Phillies. And so we got into talking. And I was like, "Yeah, man." He's like, "Bryce is, you know, Jake. He plays drums for Luke." He goes, "Oh, man, this is awesome, blah, blah, blah." And I told him how I went to school in Philly, and we had that connection. He was like, "Man, like, I'd love to play for the Yankees. Like, they're my favorite team." And I was like, "Man, you should."
Yeah, right.
But it was cool to, like, get a connection. Like, and, like, I told him how my dad's a huge Yankees fan. I am, too.
You guys all New York sports?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So we took a photo together. Like, I became buddies with some of the O-line guys on the Giants and stuff. So I still know them. Yeah. I used to know the old head coach who, you know, is now back with the Patriots. So it's, like, it's cool. Like, we were in Denver. I got to meet the head coach of the Denver Broncos. We exchanged numbers, and my cousin lives there now who went to Vandy. And my cousin literally, like, lost his shit meeting him. He was like, no, and, you know, so, like, I'm talking to the coach, and we're texting, and he's like, "Man, whenever you want to come to a game, I got you." And I was like, "Thank you." Because I was like, you know, man, like, whenever you want to come to the show, please, just let me know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So.
That reciprocity.
Yeah, and, like, we've gotten to meet Peyton Manning. Like, he was at our Red Rock show. He was just at our show in Denver, and it's like, dude, this is so fucking cool.
That's awesome.
I'm looking up, I'm like, dude, you're Peyton Manning.
Yep.
Like, that, your brother helped my team win 2 Super Bowls over
Peyton's
Tom Brady.
Like, you're Jake Summers, right?
He's like, you're the guy I remember playing drums.
Yeah, yeah.
That, like, horizontal integration thing, like, or was that
with athletes and musicians?
Yeah, it's so
it's
odd.
It's a trip.
Yeah.
It really is.
There's no, like, well, you're not trying to, like, worm your way into my world. You know, they know that. Like,
yeah, definitely not. Like, I mean, I would be destroyed if I played football.
Right. Like, and likewise, them not trying to come into, they're just like, oh, yeah, it's just really cool.
Yeah,
like,
they find what we do is cool and vice versa. And I remember we did Memphis last year. I went to go see one of my buddies. He's the one who runs Whiskey Jam. And the suite he was in, he was like, "Hey, come." Like, I was like, "Yeah, come up and say hi." Like, he's a good dude. I've known him for a long time now. And he's introducing me to some of the guys in his suite. And he goes, "Hey, man, this is Austin Riley, third baseman for the Atlanta Braves." I'm like, "Yeah, dude, congratulations. You just won a fucking, you know, a World Series."
Yep.
Like, I'm a nobody right now. And that's cool. I was like, dude, congrats. Yeah. Like, super nice guy. It's just cool. It's like, we have to meet these, like, these guys who, like, you know, I'm not a Braves fan, but I'm like, this is so cool to be able to meet somebody of that caliber who just won a World Series. To him, he's probably like, dude, I get to watch you from up here, down there. I'm like, yeah, that's cool, too.
It's like, we put these people on these pedestals, but then you meet them.
And they're just normal
dudes. They're just normal dudes.
Like,
right?
Bryce was such a normal guy. Ezekiel Elliott was such a normal guy. And it was so cool to, like, just be in that presence of, like, if I wasn't playing drums, I wanted to play baseball as a kid.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Did you grow up doing Little League and all that?
Little League. I pitched for my high school.
Nice.
I tried out for some D3 schools, but I mean, ultimately, I knew when I was 15 years old, I stopped playing video games cold turkey, that I wanted to play drums even more than I already was. I was playing from 6 years old on, you know, hours and hours. And then at 15 years old, like, I don't know, in upstate New York, do they have this thing called NISMA? Have you heard of it? Yeah.
Yes.
So I did that.
Full circle moment.
And
you know,
then
we can explain afterward, but
and
yeah, I knew going up too.
Yeah, so I did that, and then, like, at 15, I just knew, like, I wanted to do this professionally. So it was just, instead of, like, 4 or 5 hours, I'd be practicing for 8 hours. I remember in college, like, it's a Friday night, like, my buddies are waiting for me to go to a party. It's already, like, 9:30 at night. They're like, "Hey, dude, you coming back?" I'm like, "Give me, like, another half hour." I was already in there for 4 or 5 hours, just shedding. And it's that dedication that you learn all these genres and you dedicate yourself to the craft, that you're going to be the one that gets whatever you put into it the most, obviously.
Well, also, I was going to ask you about like kind of balancing drumming, whether it's sports or like
regular life shit.
Yeah, regular life stuff, or even like, I mean, we talk about this a lot, like being super fit and going to the gym, being healthy, especially when you're playing as much as you are.
Yeah. It's kind of funny, I guess. The last 3 or 4 years, I told myself, man, this will be the year where I like want to be in the healthiest, best shape of my life. This year, I've finally been doing it. And I go to the gym pretty much when I'm home. I go to the gym every day except for Sunday. Like, I'll split it up. Like, I'll lift Monday, Wednesday, Friday, even though people don't even know my actual workout routine, and then do cardio on Tuesdays and Thursdays and Saturdays. Yeah. But, like, I plan on when we're out in the fall to go to the gym on Saturdays as well and just do my regular routine. And I try to eat healthy. And it really is beneficial on the road when you are at a level where there is catering, because you can pick and choose what you eat.
Yeah.
And I try to eat really healthy. I try to stay away from desserts. That's like, man, if there's apple pie or cheesecake or a brownie, it's my fucking weakness.
Same.
I'm like, man, I can't.
Cookies.
And then I'm like, yeah. One won't hurt you. So, because yeah. I try to drink a lot of water before the show. And I have them put like a Gatorade up there for me as well for electrolytes. But yeah, I mean, I love, you know, really enjoy working out. My parents have played golf for a long time, and they tried to get me into it when I was younger, but recently, the last few years, I've really been getting into it, and within the last year, have my swing on, like, perfection to an extent for myself, and since I've gotten back recently from seeing my folks, I've been going to the golf course near my house and just hitting balls, or, like, going to play nine. I'm playing tomorrow with a buddy of mine, and just, cool. Like, I love it. You know, I like playing tennis. I enjoy tennis. Anything outdoors, cardio wise, man. If I could play basketball, do that. Yeah. I played basketball growing up. I mean, I'd love to do like a game of two hand touch football or like play baseball again. But baseball, let's face it, it's not going to happen. Or I'd love to just throw a ball.
Yeah.
You know, go to a park and throw a ball.
Yeah.
Something of that nature. But I just love being outside. I like to go hiking when I can, canoeing. You know, so anything that gets me out, even though I stay in my house a lot when I'm home.
Yeah, especially with that new Audi Mute studio.
I stay in that room.
There's reason to.
So for a few hours
a
day.
Is that studio? Is it? Maybe you already mentioned this. Is it like the living room? Is it a basement? Is it a garage?
No, so it's technically a flex room.
Oh, okay.
So it's a bonus room in my house.
Cool.
And it is above the garage.
Okay.
And it's like two vaulted ceilings. It just sounds amazing. Like, I got to have you guys over and check it out. So what are you guys doing? I mean, I can't hit drums now, but I'm joking. What are you guys doing after this? But
so that Audi Mute process, is that like many months of planning? Or how did that go? Because like we just see like the final results of all these studios getting built.
It was a few months of going back and forth of like,
different
setups or like different, layouts and whatnot.
Did he need to come there to measure first or not?
I measured everything, but now he told me there's a super cool app. If you guys have the iPhone 13, it's called Polycam. Mm. And what you can do,
it's like AR, right?
Is VR? You can scan the room 3D.
Oh, shoot.
And then you can, it has all the measurements right there. It's super cool.
Yeah, okay.
And I was like, well, Mitch, thanks for telling me about it now when, you know, I guess it wasn't out when I had to do the measurements, yeah. But he did a fabulous job, and I'm happy that he's getting all this business.
Yeah, it's pretty cool to see.
I might need to employ him for a room of my own, because I need to. We've got an extra room in the house we just bought.
It's worth it. It's definitely worth it. I mean,
I can't play drums at home right now, and I need that.
We did a decibel level test. Because I had Peacemaker in the window that was closest to where my neighbor was, and we put something else in it that's actually a little thicker and does a better job. And I played, and Mitch stood outside, and we did a decibel reading, and it was at like 45.
Wow.
60, I think, is a whisper. So the birds are louder than me playing, or just as loud.
Oh my God.
And I have like, I put a sheet.
Do you
over
hear that,
my,
babe? We're doing it.
I put a sheet over my kick drum, like they do in studios, to help muffle. I changed the beater to a Zorro beater instead of a Danmar. And I think I put a sheet over my piano bench as like a little gobo for my floor tom. And it helps.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, even this minimal, like those sheets. Actually, everything here is Audi Mute except for the cloud that McVeigh built.
Okay.
This is just cheap, like Amazon stuff. But if we get this new room, we might have to get some new stuff also, too.
Yeah.
I could put you in touch with Mitch.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, let's make that a thing for sure.
Yeah,
because he's awesome, man. He'd want to help out the kindness of, you know, yeah, of his heart. And it's like, you might not need the craziest shit, but like, if you're just like, hey, this is kind of what we need, he can find a solution.
Yep.
So
sweet.
I guess next up would be at some point the Grammys. Mm. If that ever happens, that'd be a really, you know, that's, I think, another, it's like SNL is like cool TV moment of like late night stuff.
Yeah.
Grammys, like the, I feel like pinnacle award shows.
You've arrived.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's, yeah, it doesn't, it's not, for obvious reasons, there isn't anything above that. It's
no.
It's like, that's it.
I mean, I've been very fortunate to like, I never thought I was going to play at the Skirmerhorn here in town. I think it was last year, they did the CMT Great Honors for Randy Travis.
Hmm.
And we got to do that. And that was super cool because it's like, I'm playing the Skirmerhorn. It's a place where they do symphonies and stuff. And that was neat. That was like one place I never thought I'd play. It's like Bridgestone, cool, I get. Like, you know, Exit In, Ascend, we got to do, which was cool.
I just saw Ben Rector there.
How was that?
It was great. It's my first time there too.
It's a cool place.
We were just like, you know, lawn seats.
Yeah, it's all you need.
Super enjoyable.
It's because it's not a huge amphitheater either.
Yeah, it was a sold out show. So
that's awesome.
It seemed huge, you know.
Yeah, well, when you pack that place out, it definitely seems.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 But I heard they're going to use. I don't know if you guys heard about this, but I heard they're going to use the new soccer stadium as like a concert venue too.
No kidding.
That holds, I think that holds 30,000.
Have you been there yet?
No.
It looks amazing.
I've only gone to one soccer game. My buddy took me. It was the last home game at Nissan. It was so much fun. I don't really give two shits about soccer.
Same.
But it was a lot of fun.
The atmosphere though seems amazing, especially the new stadium.
Oh, I bet it's awesome.
I worked a couple of the soccer games when I was working with Daddy's, and it was fun.
Yeah, it just seems wild.
I bet Daddy liked it too. Oh,
Daddy does. Daddy likes.
But yeah, SNL is cool. I mean,
do you get nervous for those? Have you ever gotten nervous for these big time events?
The two I've gotten the most nervous for TV wise was the Today Show, because that was our first one. And then the first time, I don't know why, it was like the first time we did Kimmel.
Mm.
That was also like a really messed up, in a way, for all of us moment, because remember that Route 91 festival that happened in 2017 where the shooting took place in Vegas?
Oh, yeah.
We played that night.
Oh, wow.
Oh, wow.
And then we had to do Kimmel the next day. Mm-hmm. And then we started our tour the next day after that. Jeez. At, what's the venue next to the Rainbow?
Oh.
The Roxy.
Yeah.
We started there and we were out for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
I remember I called my parents when we were still on the bus and they were sleeping. And, like, they had no idea what happened. They thought we were already in L.A. And my parents, like, their phones were blowing up, all this stuff. And, like, I just remember, we don't have to get into it, but, like, my parents, like, what? We thought you were in L.A. I was like, because I called them. I remember the message. I was like, hey, guys, like, well, you know, like, I'm fine, blah, blah. And they're like, they thought, like, yeah, of course you're fine. You're in L.A. So.
Wow.
But then once, you know, they woke up in the morning, that's like, crazy. Oh, shit. You know.
That's why he was calling.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. Yeah. So, but yeah, that was a very traumatic time. But we got to do Kimmel since then, and it's been much better.
Yeah. A much more wholesome setting.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, doing Fallon was super cool, like seeing Questlove's kit. Mm. And I wish I got to talk to Questlove then, but he seemed busy. So I didn't want to be like that guy and be like, hey, man, like I went to college in Philly and I met you once there on South Street, but you don't remember me.
Yeah.
So.
Again, I'm gonna apply that same logic that you brought to this going forward.
They're not
like,
busy.
Then we're busy.
Yeah, we're busy.
Or at least not.
We're busy.
Yeah. At least like you're not gonna be as scared to approach that person.
I mean it. I'm joking a little bit, but I really mean it. I'm like, I'm just from the start of this conversation, as you've said that a couple times about the, like, I'm sure you're busy. I'm like, I'm not anymore. Now I'm like,
you're right.
Now I'm like, yeah, probably just going backstage to eat pizza.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, like, not everybody can be busy all the time. And you still got to live your life. And it's like, it's going to be busy there's an extent of busyness that I like to be at where I haven't reached that yet. And I know I want to. And I know when I would hit my breaking point of like, hey, like, I can say it was like I'm doing a Broadway shift today. I'm doing a session or two tomorrow, you know, stuff like that. And it's like, there will come a point where it's like, I need to take like a day off.
Yes.
Before going on tour. Mm-hmm. But, or I might have the mindset of like, no, I like being this busy. It's like, cool. I'm doing one Broadway gig. It's not till nighttime. I could fit a few lessons in today, do like two sessions tomorrow.
Yeah.
Yada, yada, you know, whatever else. And like, cool. You know, yeah. It's like, I'm doing what I love. I'm making a living doing what I love aside from the main bulk of it. And I get to inspire other drummers.
Yeah.
So.
What else could you want, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
You figured it out, man. So props to you.
Thank you. I mean, yeah. Aside from what drummer doesn't want more gear and drums? That's the only other thing I really like.
Right.
I was at Forks yesterday and playing this 23-inch ride cymbal that I have the 22-inch version of. I was like, man, like, do I want to order this? And I was like, well, my birthday's coming up next month, and I probably shouldn't, but maybe it'll give it to me as a gift.
You're like, well, it is another inch. You know,
yeah. It's, everybody can gain it. I shouldn't say that.
Easiest way to gain an inch.
Yep. Oh,
buy it.
Yep. Buy it.
Perfect.
Perfect.
Yeah. Yeah. There it is. Oh, man.
Should we ask
James, oh, I know you'll get questions. I was going to say, don't you guys do rapid fire questions?
See, this guy's been listening. He's prepared.
Dude, yeah. I'm prepped, man. Let's go.
I don't want to steal yours. I already know what you're going to ask.
I don't even know what I'm going to ask, so.
I know what you're going to. Fine. You don't know what you're going to ask. Do you like hot chicken?
I've asked that two or three times.
Hey, I'll still take that question. The answer is fucking right, I do.
Yeah, okay. Can you go all the way?
With like which one? Hattie B's?
Wait, Hatties or Prince's? Or?
So with Hatties, I can do the double hot.
Wow, okay.
Yeah, and I like to do... I like spicy food in general. Like, yeah. I like Indian food. And so with the Hattie B's, I haven't done whatever their highest is. I've done the double hot. And I get the comeback sauce. So I used to live in another area of town when I first moved here. And I had walked Party Foul. I was like, man, I like spicy. I got their poltergeist. And I had to walk home. Never get their poltergeist. I literally felt like I was getting stabbed in my stomach over and over again. I ate bread. I drank milk. I tried to force myself to get it out of me. I couldn't. I've done Prince's. I do their medium. I've done hot. Their hot's pretty hot.
Yeah.
Bolton's hot chicken, like their hot,
that's the same, right?
Is really hot. I had it once, and I had their medium. Their medium is like Hattie B's hot.
Yeah.
So their hot is like hot.
Yeah.
I have, within the last few years, have had an affinity for cheesecake, and I hate cream cheese.
Mm.
Dislike it.
Really?
People are like, oh, do you like cream cheese and lox? And I'm like, no, I think it's disgusting. And they're like, how? You're Jewish. And I'm like, I know. I'm a bad Jew.
We're all Jewish. Look at that.
Really? We should definitely keep this in. Oh, we should edit it out. We probably should edit it out. Yeah. I'm the odd one out, though, who doesn't like fucking cream cheese and lox.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
People are like, what do you put on your bagel? I'm like, butter. Actually, I put on, I can't believe it's not butter.
Oh, man. Oh, come on. Out of the tribe.
You're going to Satan's hell.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. I don't know if this is a rapid fire question for you guys, but if it's about candy, I won't answer. I won't say it now in case you guys have a rapid fire about what's your favorite candy.
Say what you're going to say.
Yeah. It's Reese's Cups.
Reese's Cups.
So one time for my birthday, Luke got me like every Reese's Cup. We actually were playing my hometown amphitheater, which was super cool because that was the first concert I ever went to there. And then you fast forward, I was like the day after I turned 27. And he bought me every Reese's Cup, and we're sitting like in catering, eating Reese's Puffs together.
That's amazing.
What a wholesome experience,
right? Yeah. Oh yeah.
He seems like a great guy.
He is a wonderful, wonderful guy.
I've watched a few interviews, and he's on some podcasts.
Yeah, he's
seems like you said amazing. Earlier, like the fame hasn't changed. Like, no. He's still the same dude.
No.
Always love to see that. Mm-hmm. Well, dude, Jake, it was so good to meet you. And
thank you guys for having me. Sure, we'll appreciate
talking
it.
To you.
So, yeah,
just quick, if people want to get a hold of you for lessons. And,
So they can go to jakesummersdrums.com, and you can go to my Instagram at jakesummers7, and you can message me there. And I'm on Facebook. I don't really use it that much. I'm on Jamcard. But yeah, Instagram's probably the biggest one. And then get my website. My email's on there. It's easy to contact me through that. And I'm always good at getting back to people. So, yeah. Clinics, lessons, teaching. Do it all. So
awesome. Rather get lost than listen to
the boss man breathing down my neck. Yeah. Thanks for listening to this episode of the Nashville Drummers Podcast. If you liked it, please consider leaving us a review on the Apple Podcast app.
Also, check out our new website, NashvilleDrummersPodcast.com. And if you're not already following us on Instagram, you can follow us at Nashville Drummers Podcast.